welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast with Jonathan Lack
and Sean Chapman.
We are here to talk about stuff. This week on the show, we're going to do a little pre-E3 talk.
Pre-E3 talk.
Which is basically why the podcast is delayed.
Yeah.
We could have recorded last weekend to get our normal Monday episode out.
But there was just nothing to talk about.
There wasn't, and we could already feel the just storm of E3 news coming. And yeah. I was like, let's push it back.
Yeah.
And so this is Saturday morning. This is coming out. So you have this for the weekend. This will be all the pre-E3 news. Because E3 now is like two halves. All the shit that leaks and is announced ahead of time. And then the actual press conferences.
Yeah.
So today we're doing all the pre-E3 news. We're also going to talk a little bit about speculation. What are we going to see? What are we not going to see? Etc. Yeah.
How many sports games are is EA going to show this year?
Indeed. And then on next week, I think we're probably going to try to aim to record Monday or Tuesday night, once the press conferences are over. Midweek, we'll have the sort of our annual recap of all the big press conference stuff.
Yeah.
So, sound good, Sean?
Sounds good to me, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of shit has been happening leading up to E3. I'm very excited to talk about it.
Absolutely. So we'll get into all of that. I want to start with a little follow-up from last week.
All right.
Which is, I finished Doom.
Very good game.
I pretty much finished it the day after we talked about it.
Yeah.
But I haven't forgotten any of it, because that game has a great fucking ending.
Yeah, it does.
Those last few levels are fantastic. Those last few boss fights shouldn't be good, but they are.
They are really good. And especially the way you kill the last boss in the game is a very good, very good way to sort of sign that game off.
Absolutely. And I think the last kind of narrative beat of that game is just awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I mean, those boss fights basically remind me of like Zelda or Metroid Prime boss fights, but with Doom mechanics.
Yeah, so it's a lot more sort of intense, twitchy. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, it's a very interesting thing, but they're a lot of fun. That game has a great ending, and I have not gone back and gotten like every trophy and all the collectibles, but I've done like half of the game again doing that stuff, and it's a lot of fun. I also got into multiplayer to get all my multiplayer trophies.
Yeah.
I really like the multiplayer for that game.
It's fun. Like, I think it's sort of a light experience, but I enjoyed it.
And here's what sucks about this month in gaming. We have the Doom multiplayer suite, which I really like. And the Uncharted 4 multiplayer suite, which I really like.
Yeah.
And I have not had time for either of them because Overwatch is out. Yeah. And why would you play any other multiplayer shooter when Overwatch is out?
But Jonathan, don't you want to dip your toes into the rich experience that is Battleborn?
No, no one does. They dropped that game's price by $20 like a week after it came out.
Yeah, and they just sort of like shuffled away from it and was like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah.
Overwatch, that fucking worked though.
Oh my god. I mean, okay, Doom is great. Loved the multiplayer. Had a lot of fun with that. I would like to go back into it. I haven't yet, but I might. And Snap Map. Not for me, because I'm not crazy, but holy crap, is that a good map editor.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it leverages a lot of like AI, like logic chains and stuff like that, which is stuff you usually don't see in console map editors. Like Forge doesn't have any of that kind of stuff in it at all.
It's definitely the best one I've seen on a console since Forge.
Yeah.
And it's really cool, and I might go back into that community in a few weeks and just see what they've come up with. Because some of the early stuff was not all that impressive to me, but I can tell once people get their toes wet with that, it is quite the tool.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
and it's got a great name. Snap Map. Just so good.
No, it's great. It's very intuitive. Doom as a whole, that package is incredible. I think any of those three components are all fantastic. The campaign is clearly the brightest spot, but you know, if you like that kind of multiplayer shooter, you could get months of enjoyment out of that.
Yeah.
And if you like building maps, like that kind of thing, you have to own this game. Like, it's a must-own.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of stuff. So, definitely a Game of the Year contender.
For sure, yeah.
But Overwatch, which I think will be for many people a Game of the Year contender.
Yeah.
Certainly it is the phenomenon of the year so far in gaming.
Yes, it is like, generated the most memes of any game this year.
And I just like, before I even talk about the quality, the sales of that game blow me away, because that beta had 10 million users, which is nuts. Like, to compare the Destiny beta, which was a huge beta, had 5 million.
Yeah.
So it's insane. And in its first week, Overwatch had 7 million active users.
Yeah, it's nuts.
70% of that beta audience bought the game.
Yeah, like, especially when you think that, like, that those numbers would not be as surprising if Overwatch went the more like Team Fortress 2 kind of route and was just straight free to play, or like Counter-Strike Go is another really popular, mostly PC shooter, but that's like $20 and has a huge audience.
Yeah.
Whereas like Overwatch, you on the PC at least, you could get a $40 edition, which didn't have like a bunch of the skins and whatever, but like on console, that's a $60 game straight up. And with that kind of buy-in for a multiplayer-only game, we have seen tons of stuff like Evolve come out, and Titanfall was successful, but not to this level, and the multiplayer population died out really quickly there, whereas like with Overwatch, it just seems like it has broken that curse of like the multiplayer-only console shooters that just like has flourished instead of diminished, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's... I love Overwatch. I've played two. I'm about level 26 or 27. I forget exactly where I am.
Right.
But I've played all of that with my little brother. Just he's sitting in another room of the house, and we're playing. And it is a just glorious experience. Whether you're winning or losing, it is such a fun game. And it is so cool to me to see that Blizzard can launch a new IP like this. And this is their first technically new IP in 20 years.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Brand new. And they can just throw down and say, all right, we're going to do something totally new. Like, it's not necessarily a new genre, but for us, this is a new thing.
Yeah, Blizzard has never made anything even close to a first-person shooter.
Right. We're going to do something that for literally everyone else has failed on consoles, and we're just going to do it right, and they did. It is a real achievement. Like, this is not my favorite game of the year so far, but it's going to be in my top 10, and I do think if you were to say almost like achievement of the year in terms of a cultural impact, it is Overwatch so far in gaming.
Yeah.
And it's a blast. And I've seen some of the complaints, and they're not necessarily wrong, that it's a little light on maps and modes to start. But those maps are so good. And those modes are so good. And there's such a deep sense of balance and strategy to everything you do. I've played a lot of Overwatch. I've probably played 15 hours, not counting the beta stuff, because it counts your hours. And I'm still learning new stuff about, you know, strategy and how to get stuff done. And, you know, I figured out who my mains are at this point. May and Reinhardt.
May is
the best.
May is the best.
May is awesome. Yeah. But I love all the characters that, you know, there. And it's great that I can play as a character and say, okay, this character is not for me, but I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Like, Winston is one of those characters. I'm not good as Winston. I'm glad Winston is a part of the game. If for nothing else, when Winston and Reinhardt are standing by the door at the start of a match, they have the funniest conversation.
Hmm.
It's great.
Yeah, that is an aspect of the game that people don't talk about as much. It's got that, like, I feel like Left 4 Dead did that a lot, of just having, like, there's not a story in Overwatch, but these are characters that have their own histories and stuff, that have personalities, and, like, there is a lore and history to the narrative setting of Overwatch, and that is exposed through tiny little, two, three-sentence conversations between the characters at the beginning of matches and stuff like that. And that's such a smart little touch that most games, like, I don't think any other game since Left 4 Dead has done something like that.
Yeah, it's great. There's just little things like seeing how the community evolves. Like, there's this little thing now that people do where you have on your emote screen, you can say, my ultimate is charging.
Right.
And one person will say that, and then everyone before the match starts will say that, and it's hilarious because before the match starts, it's meaningless. Your ultimate, everyone's at 0%. And it's just a funny little thing people do, the way people compete with the sprays you can do on the walls. Yeah. I like the unlock system because it is entirely cosmetic. I mean, how refreshing is it to have a big multiplayer shooter like this where there really is no upgrade system? The characters are the characters. It's almost like a Super Smash Brothers or a Street Fighter or something, but in a shooter where the characters are the characters. You are not changing them. It's the scenarios that are dynamic and evolving.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. And I've seen some people be like, yeah, doesn't my progression do more? And I'm like, no, I don't want the progression to do more. This is good.
Because that's what they did to fucking Team Fortress 2 that ruined it for me, is I fucking hated it when they added all this different loot and stuff, that like different guns you could get for characters that changed how the characters worked. It's like, no, it was so perfect before. It had this perfect sense of balance. And, like, I really hope, and I don't think Overwatch will do that, and I really hope they don't, because there is something about just knowing exactly what your weapons do, and knowing exactly what your teammates' weapons do, and knowing exactly what your enemies' weapons do, just based on what their character is, that is so refreshing and so nice when you're not playing, like, you know, Call of Duty, and you, like, run into a guy, and the guy could have a sniper rifle, he could have a shotgun, he could have an assault rifle, he could have an LMG, and you have no idea, because everyone can start out with any weapon they want, basically. In Overwatch, there's a sense of tactical awareness that you can really hone just based on understanding the characters and how they interact, and that they don't throw a wrench in that by making it random, you know? Yeah,
absolutely. I should say the game has also run very smoothly for me in terms of matchmaking and online functionality. There was a hiccup on launch night with the Xbox, and there have been some other hiccups. I would personally ascribe that to Xbox Live, because Xbox Live has been a dumpster fire since the Xbox One launched.
Yeah.
And we might have to do a topic on that at some point, because no one's talking about that. It is a real problem. Xbox Live is shit at this point. And I think, I do not blame Blizzard for any of that, because if any company knows how to make online stuff work, it's fucking Blizzard.
Yeah, World of Warcraft since 2004. Yeah. I think they know something about servers.
So, you know, if something goes wrong, like what it was night one is you couldn't get any of your friends in a group with you, which is a problem for that kind of game because you want to play with your friends. Yeah. And I would be inclined in other scenarios to say, oh, Blizzard didn't do their homework, except that happens on like every Xbox Live game I've ever played at some point. Never happened to me on PlayStation. Now, to be honest, I do not link up with friends as much on PlayStation, but also say, when I do play multiplayer stuff on PlayStation these days, not a problem in the world. It's been like such a reversal from the days of the PS3, where PSN could be horseshit sometimes, and Xbox Live was buttery smooth. Not anymore.
Yeah, I think what it is specifically with the Xbox One is like the party system in particular is just fucked. Like, I just don't even understand how it works. Like, it just, it breaks.
It frequently doesn't work. Yeah. That's what it happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm really enjoying right now because my brother is home for the summer. We don't have to use headsets. He's just in another room and we talk to each other.
Yeah.
And that's way better because sometimes chat just doesn't work on Xbox. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Overwatch, technically, I will say, has some tearing on Xbox that is annoying to me. And I'm pretty damn sure it's not there on PS4 or PC. At least when I played the PS4 beta, there was none of it. And from what I've heard from like reading the analyses online, it's very rare on those other platforms. So maybe we really do need that beefed up Xbox One.
Maybe, yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
All right. Sean, you've played some Witcher 3 Blood and Wine.
Yes, I have played a lot of Witcher 3 Blood and Wine, and I'm still not done.
Is there more blood in that game or wine?
There's a lot of both. Like, I honestly, I can't answer that question, because there is a lot of both.
I mean, in the main Witcher game, it would be blood, definitely.
Yes, but with Blood and Wine, I'm like, I have no idea how far I'm in. Like, I feel like I've done a lot of the side stuff and like sort of dipped my toes a bit into the main quest. Like, I basically only mainlined the main quest like all yesterday of my playing the game. So I feel like I'm getting further in, but there's a huge amount of content in this thing. It is ridiculous. It is bigger than most other full games. Like, it's completely insane.
And it only costs $20, right?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. So basically, like, Blood and Wine, what it is that it's a far more expansive piece of DLC than Heart of Stone, which, like, the Heart of Stone one, which is a great expansion also, that takes place basically, like, in the upper right corner of the, like, Redania Novigrad map, and they just sort of, like, push the borders back a little bit, so there is some more landmass and other, like, little random, like, question mark things to interact with and stuff in Heart of Stone. But it is mostly just like a long main quest thing in Heart of Stone, which is really well done. Whereas here, they do the thing where you sail off to DLC land. So it's like you go to a whole other different full map that is basically like the size of like maybe just Velen without like the Novigrad part, or like just the Skellige Isles if you mush them all together. Like, it is a full region of that game called Toussaint, which is like sort of this loose, like, kind of like France kind of analog, and has a little bit of like kind of like Italy stuff in there as well. Kind of like how like Skellige Isles is sort of like the UK Isles, I like the British Islands, but it's also sort of like Norway, you know, like Witcher sort of mixes some of its cultures, real world cultures in that way. It's kind of got that feel. And so Toussaint has a lot of like wine stuff is like a huge part of their culture, and it's really bright and colorful, and it's very sort of like happy on the outside. It's like it's such a breath of fresh air coming from like the main Witcher 3, where like all like half of the Witcher 3 takes place in Velen, which is an area which has just been completely war torn, and it's just disgusting swamp filled with dead bodies because all these armies have marched through and shit. And this is like really pristine, beautiful. It's all like these beautiful like wine villas and stuff like that that have all these people working on them. And what's interesting about it is that it has a very different tone than most of the rest of Witcher 3, because Toussaint has this like really luxurious upper class that is the face of everything you run into. But underneath all of that is where you have like there's like serious class discrimination. You have, you know, you have like the people running the wineries that own it. And then you have the, like, dozens and dozens of farmhands that are just sort of, like, oppressed and abused, that are just working, plucking grapes all day and that kind of stuff, and interacting with this really intricate aristocracy that has this sort of Arthurian knight-errant kind of element to them. It's a very unique feel to everything else from the main Witcher 3, but still has that sense of deft narrative craftsmanship to all of it, and it's just expertly done. Like, I can't praise it enough.
I saw you tweet something about how it's amazing how every vendor in the Witcher games, or in the Witcher 3, has his own, like, story.
And yeah, character. It is, because you'll just, like, run up to some random person. Like, I did, like, just the other day, I ran up to an innkeep lady and talked to her, and it was just, like, a random innkeep, and I was just going up to her to buy some new Gwent cards, because there are new Gwent cards, and the Gwent is real good again. And I was talking to her, and she just is, like, recognizes that I'm from the north, I'm a Nordling, and, like, we have a little conversation where she says, like, oh, I have family from up there, what is it like, because there's a whole war going on where the Southern Empire is basically invading the Northern realms. And he's like, oh, like, where do they live? And she says, oh, they live in Vingerberg, have you ever been there? And then Geralt makes a sort of sly comment, because Yennefer, his love interest, is from Vingerberg. It's just this really quick, like, 2-minute conversation between Geralt and this random innkeep lady, and it doesn't have to be anything. It doesn't have to be a conversation, but, like, most of the different vendors and random people you run into the world have their own lives to them and have their own thing going on, and they just, in a very economical fashion, are able to get that across.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the difference between The Witcher 3 and everyone else trying to do this thing right now.
Yeah.
Of open world stuff. I had a tweet last week where I was making fun of, what was it? Mirror's Edge Catalyst, which sounds like a game that looked really promising, and they made a generic open world game.
Yeah, which the buzz about that game is very poor.
Yeah, which is disappointing to me. And I just tweeted, like, I was interested in this game until it turned out it's just a generic open world game. Unless your name is The Witcher and you were made by an awesome Polish studio, I don't care about an open world game.
Yeah.
And my brother was asking me about that, because he really likes open world games, and that's fine. And he's always been, he doesn't understand my hostility towards the genre.
Yeah.
Do you understand my hostility towards the genre?
Yeah. Okay. Like, I think you got there faster than me. I think you tired out of the genre quicker than I did, but it definitely, like, the last couple of years, it had been very trying. And stuff like Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor, which was, like, a good game, like, fine on its own merits in a lot of ways, but, like, eventually some of, like, the terrible main quest line and the horrible pacing of all that stuff just, like, wore me down. And there's so many, like, the original Watch Dogs was very much that.
That was the year that broke me of it, was Watch Dogs was one thing. But then there were a bunch of games that year that, like, I started and never got that deep into because I realized Dragon Age
Inquisition was another one.
And I got very far. I played 80 fucking hours of that thing.
Yeah, me
didn't
too.
Near the fucking end. Anyway. That's a game with a lot of greatness that I would not call great because of padding.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I got broken of it that year because I got to this point with every open world game I would play where I would sit there for hours fetch questing and you open your map and you're like, what do I, okay, set the waypoint, now I go to the waypoint, now I do the thing, now I have to go back, I set the waypoint, it's the same thing whether it is in Seattle, or it is in the Dragon Age world, or it's in Middle Earth. It's the same game, and I couldn't do it anymore. And it was amazing to me how much The Witcher 3 brought me back into that kind of thing, because going back to your point about the vendors, every little part of that game feels important and narrativized and thematized in a way that never makes me feel like I'm wasting a second of my time. Because I want to be in that world, because that world feels alive. And it's actually, I was even trying to explain this to my brother, and maybe I just wasn't explaining it very well, because I wasn't, you know, in podcast mode, like, thinking about this. But, like, I played last year, for the first time, finally, The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Right, yeah.
And it was amazing to me how that is an early open world game, technically.
Yeah.
And how little I feel a lot of games have failed to learn the lessons of that game. Where that is, for its time and everything, I think a similarly deep world to something The Witcher, in terms of
just smaller in scope, but has that sort of depth to it for sure.
Absolutely, because wherever you go, whatever you do, it feels narrativized and thematized. You know, just think of, if you didn't love the world that much, the turn where you become adult Link and it's all destroyed, that would mean nothing to you.
Yeah.
And it's a big hit. Mm-hmm. I think no matter how many times you see that game, that moment hits because of what that world is to you. Even I think some of the early Pokemon games, the way just there's such clever writing and like who you talk to and just how silly it can be and kind of fun and simple. I don't need it to be technically mind-blowing or anything like that. It's more just the sense of character and whether or not you're putting stuff in that matters or you're making it big for the sake of being big. And so I just was thinking about this again with the Mirror's Edge Catalyst thing and a lot of the E3 announcements we're going to talk about of games that would look promising to me 3 years ago, but I feel are so past their moment, I don't care about.
Yeah, like a good example of what you're talking about is how like most open-world games these days pad themselves out with like not just like one set of collectibles, but it's usually like a tiered set of like, oh, you have to find all the feathers and all the... Or like Assassin's Creed Syndicate was ridiculous. Because it's like you had to find the pressed flowers, you had to find the like fucking Animus glitch fragments, you had to find fucking bottles of wine. There's a lot of wine going on. You had to find like posters or something on a wall. There was like four or five different fucking kinds of collectibles that that map was filled with. It was just like when I'm playing The Witcher 3, there are no collectibles at all, and the only thing, the closest thing they have to collectibles was like the Witcher armor treasure hunt sets, which are their own quest lines. And one of my favorite parts of the Blood and Wine was when I was just traveling around the world and sort of decided to found a good spot in the main quest line to sort of stop for a second, like, I'm just going to explore Toussaint and figure out what it's about and what it's like. And like you can get the next tier up of all the different Witcher armor sets, and there's another Manticore armor set, so there's a lot of different armor things to go find in the treasure hunt quest. And going and finding that was super rewarding because I got to explore around the map. And so I was hitting like all different side quests and stuff along the way and seeing all this interesting shit. And then when I finally got to this temple or something that I knew, this is where I need to start the first clue on the hunt for treasure. All those different, like the next wolf armor set, the next feline armor set, you were following the different tracks of these other witchers that had visited Toussaint, who had these diagrams with them and who all perished in different ways on their own quests. And you're following around and finding their journals and finding all this stuff and connecting pieces. And some of them, like some of the minor characters that sort of feature in the background of some of the treasure hunt quests are feature in the background of other quests that they're completely unrelated at first and stuff like that. And the interlinking of the narrative and just the way that it's told is so perfect and magical, really. Like, it just feels so naturally built. And when I think back to Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which was a game I enjoyed, but like could not finish for the life of me because it was filled with all the classic open world fluff. In The Witcher 3, it's like, there is no fluff. Everything feels important. Even like Gwent feels like a substantial thing to do because I just started down the path of there's a new Gwent tournament in Toussaint that like, because here's how perfect this game is. This is how perfect their narrative like world building is that they introduce a new like kind of class set in Gwent, a new deck, and there were four in the past. There was like the Scoia'tael, the Northern Realms, Nilfgaardians, and the Monsters, and they're just different sets of cards that sort of like work together, kind of like in Hearthstone you have the Mage and like the Warrior and stuff like that. And this one they introduced a Skellige deck, and when you go to the tournament you find out that the Skellige deck was made by this guy who's running this tournament and his dead brother, who the dead brother was the guy who made all the cards, and they had in their childhood visited Skellige all the time and loved Gwent, and they just wanted to make something of their own. And then after his brother died, he decided to complete the deck and like sort of disseminate it and all this stuff. It's like, that's amazing. You created this heart-wrenching fucking story
for your about
the
market.
New Gwent deck. Like, that's amazing. And then also thinking of Gwent, I should note the music in Blood and Wine. Like, I love all the music in Witcher 3, and the Blood and Wine expansion pack is basically all new music. Nice. And the new Gwent music in particular is fucking great, because the old Gwent music was probably my least favorite piece of music in the whole game. And this has, like, what seems like it's one really long theme that is sort of like the new kind of party, like, tavern theme, which was what the Gwent theme was also the tavern theme in the original game. And this has this really long, like, 10-minute or something track that's like that, that just moves between all these different movements. So it's like, every time you start out a Gwent game, it kind of starts in a different part of the song, and you hear a different part of it. It's like, that's really awesome. And all the music when you're wandering around the world in Blood and Wine is just fantastic. It's just, it's really good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you were wondering about our thoughts on open world games and The Witcher 3 in particular,
yeah,
that's a little referendum on that.
Witcher 3 is still super good.
Awesome. Maybe I'll play that. I'll start playing that tomorrow. I need something new to play. That could be a fun way to spend my weekend.
Yeah.
Go to Toussaint.
Toussaint. Like, I just love the way that all the people living in Toussaint say Toussaint.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on. Sean, pre-E3 news.
Pre-E3.
All right. So what I did is I collected... This is not every bit of pre-E3 news, because there's a lot.
Yeah.
But this is all, I think, the major stuff that's interesting. I've been collecting it as the week went along, starting at the point where I think the announcement that kind of opened the floodgates, because it came out of fucking nowhere. But let's talk about these, Sean.
Okay.
First announcement. Square Enix has announced for release next year on the PlayStation 4, Final Fantasy XII, The Zodiac Age, which is their HD remake of Final Fantasy XII, which was the last Final Fantasy on the PS2,
yep.
Kind of following the footsteps of their Final Fantasy X remaster, which was really well received.
Yeah, because 11 was the first MMO, so
yeah.
You're probably not going to see a remaster of that. That'd be weird.
It would be weird to like compete with 14.
Yeah, compete with yourself.
Yeah, so, but 12, I mean... This is, someone pointed out, and it's really interesting, I had never thought of this, 12 was, until this, the only Final Fantasy game to not be out on multiple consoles.
Huh.
It's only been on PS2, and it's kind of, even though that game was very well received at the time, it's kind of had a muted legacy because it's been harder to access. Like, it's one I've always wanted to go back and play, but I'm not going to sit at my CRT TV with my PS2 for 60 hours and play it.
Yeah, like, the Final Fantasy XII is one of the ones I know virtually nothing about. Like, the only thing I've ever seen from it were, like, trailers and stuff back in the day.
Yeah, it seems like a cool game. So, I mean, the trailer for this is gorgeous. It looks like they did a really good job on it. It means they're going to have the Final Fantasy stuff coming hard and fast in the next few years. Because we've got 15 this September. This will be 2017. They did not announce a time window, but next year... I doubt it'll get delayed or anything. Seems like this has been in the works for a while. I mean, there have been previous rumors about this, so this didn't come out of nowhere. But there's that. And then at some point, the 7 remake, which indicates to me that 7 remake is still a ways off.
Probably, yeah.
That's probably 2018.
Yeah, that's the earliest.
Yeah. But I think this is a good way to tide people over. It's a PS4 exclusive, which makes me wonder if the PS2 games have some kind of exclusivity with Sony in like their original contracts.
Because maybe.
All their other ones have come out on PC.
Yeah.
But the 10 and Xbox One and everything, the 10 remaster stayed only in the Sony family. This is a PS... They didn't announce it as a timed exclusive. It's a PS4 game.
Yeah.
So kind of interesting.
That's a good point. There may have been something because those games also didn't go to any of the other consoles of the day, like the GameCube and the Xbox, which could have run those games perfectly well.
Yeah, because like... And as soon as 13 on the new systems, that came out day and date on the 360.
Yeah.
And 14 is on PC and everything, so... Yeah, then everything else has come out on PC at this point.
Yeah.
Although, no, 10... Did 10 just come out on PC? So, yeah, it did.
Maybe the remaster did. That sounds right.
But that's a long time after it first came out. So anyway, I would not be surprised if Sony has some kind of deal in place there. But, yeah, so another good reason to own a PS4.
Yeah, and do you think that they will now, like, the next step is to remaster Final Fantasy 13 for new consoles?
I doubt it because, honestly, they have 8 and 9 first.
That's true.
Which are in more depth. I mean, those will be 7.
Those would be way harder to remake, though.
I know.
10, 12, 13.
I would not be surprised to see like a 13 trilogy set that's not a remake, but just an up conversion. I think it would be fine. I mean, they did it for PC, so they could just port that over. That would not surprise me in the slightest, and I think it would be welcomed by some people. So, why not, I guess.
You know, Nintendo did do that Twilight Princess HD remake, so I guess we can HD remake bad games, so.
Okay, Sean just throwing down the battle lines here.
Fuck Twilight Princess, that game sucks.
Okay, anyway, but yeah, called Final Fantasy XII The Zodiac Age.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that title because it makes it sound like a weird one of their bad sequels.
Yeah, that sounds like it's the CG movie like Final Fantasy VII Advent Children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if in America it gets a slightly different title, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So that's that. And I should also say it's based on the, like, director's cut version that came out in Japan that had extra stuff but never came to the rest of the world.
Huh.
So it has, like, the same thing happened with 10, where 10, and with, like, the Kingdom Hearts games, when they finally came out in HD here, it was with the enhancements of the Japan remakes, kind of like a Persona 4 The Golden kind of thing.
Right.
So that's, for fans of the game, that'll be cool. Next piece of news, also Sony-related.
Yes.
Horizon Zero Dawn, which was one of their big announcements last year. Looks like a cool game, the kind of thing that's going to put the PS4 through its paces. Delayed next year to February 28th, 2017. Shouldn't even say delayed. It had been called...
It had been said 2016, and that was the extent of it.
Yeah, but they finally gave it a concrete date, saying we just need a little more time. And I honestly think we're going to get to a couple of these announcements. You guys know the one we want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think the real reason some of these are coming out later isn't necessarily needing more time as much as... you'd be way smarter to launch a game in February than in November.
Yeah, it does seem like both giving time to sort of like shore up like the technical aspects of the game, and then also to give it room on the market. Because yes. We are, and we have been for a few years now, pushing away from the everything comes out in the holiday season. Like, the holiday season is still stuffed, but stuff, you know, like The Witcher 3 came out in May last year, you know. Like, stuff like that is coming out later in the year. Like, Arkham Knight came out in, like, June. Yeah. So
definitely, it's smart. So that's when that game will be out. They announced a sweet collector's edition and all that. It's up for pre-order. Still looks cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that game, because they also released like a longer trailer than we've seen before that sort of showed a bit of the story stuff. I'm just really excited for that. I also saw, like, this was a while ago, but I saw someone taking screenshots from one of the older trailers and sort of identifying that the game takes place somewhere in Colorado based on, like, the mountain range structure, and the city skyline looks like it's Denver of the dilapidated ancient human city. So that sounds really cool. Yeah.
If that's true, that'll be a big reason for us to play that, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that game. It seems really interesting.
Yeah, if you wanted to make an open-world game in Colorado, I would play that.
Yeah.
Even if it had a bunch of shitty collectibles, I think they would all be marijuana. Related, right?
It would be all marijuana related, and then there would probably be a lot of hunting animals and, like, hiking, I guess, would be... That's how I would space out my collectibles in Colorado.
Really? I think GTA could pick a very interesting Colorado game if they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, I would... You know, it would be nice for them to pick a setting that isn't the West Coast or the East Coast for fucking once, because it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, then you can have your wonderful boating sections that everyone loves in Grand Theft Auto. Anyway, let's move on. Microsoft has been the leakiest ship in gaming this week.
Yeah.
And the first of those leaks was, it looks like we're getting Dead Rising 4. Not particularly surprising. No, this will probably be a cornerstone of their E3 announcement. But just wanted to mention that. I mean, Dead Rising 3 was one of their launch titles for the Xbox One. And was well-received, if I'm not
mistaken. Fairly well-received, yeah. I didn't really play much of it because I didn't have an Xbox One at launch. But, yeah, like, I wasn't super interested in Dead Rising 3, but people liked it. Like, so, I'm a Dead Rising 1 faithful at heart. Like, even Dead Rising 2 didn't quite do it for me. Because there's something about Dead Rising that is... It's not a, like, weird zombie game made by a Japanese studio. I don't think... Like, there's something about Dead Rising 2 and Dead Rising 3 that they both were trying to copy the ways that Dead Rising 1 was weird. But those are both made by Western studios. It's like, you can't... A Western game studio can't try to copy the weirdness of a Japanese game studio. It just comes across as stilted and awkward, instead of just being naturally in and of itself purely stilted and awkward the way that the original Dead Rising 1 was. So
absolutely.
Maybe Dead Rising 4 will be great. That's a franchise I used to love, so I'd be really excited if this new one was really interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised if they put a little more work into this one to just try to make it more of an event.
Because launch games are also generally shit, because...
It had all that Kinect integration and stuff.
Yeah, like second screen stuff also was part of their big demo stuff.
You know what? This one will be better than Dead Rising 3. I think we can be pretty confident on that. Anyway, Telltale had some announcements. They talked about at E3, they're going to talk about their Batman game and all that.
Yeah.
But they concretely announced that The Walking Dead Season 3 will be arriving this fall. Clementine is not the main character, but I guess you'll run into her.
Yeah.
Which really, I don't even know who the game's for, because all I hear Walking Dead fans talk about is Clementine.
Yeah, because I guess she was... Because I did not play Season 2, because I didn't love most of Season 1. Season 1, Episode 2 was really great. Everything else was not that great. I know I'm the only person on the planet that ever says that, but it is fucking true. People who think Episode 3 is where it got good are fucking crazy. But Season 2 was where you played as Clementine.
Yeah.
But, like the Telltale stuff, I keep on meaning to load up Tales from Borderlands, but this... because I have it on PS4, and I know it's just supposed to be really good, and I'm curious to play another Telltale game, because Walking Dead Season 1 was the only one I did. But so far, like, I have just gone from new game to new game to new game with no breaks in between, so I haven't had time to go back and check that out. But overall, like, the Telltale experiment, I feel like, is really sort of dull at this point. Like, when they say, we're Telltale, we're going to make a Batman game, I'm like, you're with, like, all the 5 billion other games you're making, and they all look terrible, they all have, like, a billion different glitches, the animation is awful, like, I really wish that studio would sort of, like, shore up its projects and focus on one or two things instead of having, like, a billion.
They've weirdly become, like, a marketing arm for other people, and you're basically playing the modern equivalent of, like, Burger King games.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's like they're just advertisements for other stuff.
It would be really interesting to see Telltale try to make an original project, because, like, they kind of never have. Like, even as far as I know in the whole history of that studio, even before they got big with Walking Dead, like, they made, like, a Back to the Future adventure game before the new style of it. They made, like, the Jurassic Park game that everyone says is terrible. They made new Sam & Max games.
The only one recently that wasn't directly tied into a big ongoing property was The Wolf Among Us. Now, that is based on a comic, but it's not like that has a big TV show or something.
That's true.
And people liked that one, but otherwise it's the Minecraft game, it's the Game of Thrones game, it's
I completely forgot that they were doing the Game of Thrones one.
It was awful!
Yeah.
I played a little bit of episode one, couldn't get through it. Later learned that it centered around the worst character in the history of that show, so I'm glad I jumped ship on that. Fuck that game. Anyway, and they got a Batman one, which... I don't care.
Yeah, like, we're a bit stuffed with Batman recently.
And I don't know why, as a game studio, you would want to take on Batman after Rocksteady just had a go at it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a massive historical level success.
Yeah, like, there are lots of different interesting superhero characters you could have used. I have a bit...
Pastepot Pete, the Telltale game.
Yeah, delve into the tragic history of Pastepot Pete.
There's no comic book character better suited to the Telltale model than Pastepot Pete.
Yeah, absolutely. You can mark out the historic arc of his life where he slowly came to like an identity revelation and transitioned into becoming the Trapster instead of just Pastepot Pete. You know, we could all learn from such a brilliant coming-of-age story.
All right. Speaking of brilliant things, let's talk about the announcement we really care about, Sean.
Okay.
All right. Skip ahead like 2 hours if you don't want to hear it. Just kidding. So, Persona 5.
Yes.
Persona fucking 5. It's got a North American release date.
Yes, it does.
February 14th, 2017.
Yep.
Which means it has been pushed out of 2016, which I'm of two minds about. On one, I kind of looked forward to the glorious challenge and an orgy of greatness that would have been my top 10 list this year.
Just the spews of blood on the screen after, like, how do I reckon, like Doom and Uncharted 4 and Persona 5 and Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth? Like, how do all these amazing, world-endingly awesome games, how do not all of them be able to just coexist as, like, some sort of fucking superposition at number one in some, like, quantum fashion?
I mean, admit, you're a little sad about that, right?
I'm a little sad about it. I am mostly relieved that it is being moved to a period of time where there isn't every other game coming out that I get to play Hero Horizon Zero Dawn, hopefully probably finish that, and then play Persona 5, and then I die. Because the life doesn't exist after finishing Persona 5, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, I am a little sad that we have to wait longer for it. Mostly this makes sense. When I heard it was coming out in September in Japan, I thought, okay, it's probably not making it here this year. I think they could have made it. I think the problem is trying to get Persona 5 out here in November or December would be commercial suicide.
Yeah.
And it's going to have February, not all to itself, but it's going to own that month.
Yeah.
It's going to be up. I mean, so they put up, they announced, so they're going to have the normal edition for both PS4 and PS3. They confirmed, yes, it's still coming out on PS3, even though by the time it comes out here, the PS3 will have been supplanted for 4 years.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And but you can get it that way, but there will be the normal edition. If you pre-order in time, you will get a steelbook version of the game, which is cool. And if you're a real Persona fan, you can get the Persona 4 or Persona 5 Take Your Heart Collector's Edition, which includes, let's see if I can remember all this, the game, the steelbook, a 4-inch Morgana plush toy, she's like the cat mascot person, you get an art book, you get a soundtrack, you get a tote bag from the fucking school,
with the school logo of the game on it,
and you get a giant box to store it all in.
Yes. That is everything.
And it's only $90.
Yeah, which is, that was like, when I saw that, like, the screenshot of all the stuff, I was like, ah, shit, this is going to be like a $120 collector edition. It's like, I love Persona, but that's really pushing it. And it was like, when I saw it was $90, it was like, okay, yeah. Because then if you, like, add the Amazon cut discount on it, it's like, that's not that bad. That's
like $70.
Yeah, this is like, that's not that much more expensive than a normal game.
Yeah.
And I get all this awesome shit. I will find another way to burn a CD for a good of my life. Like, the last three CDs I think I've burned have all been Persona fucking, like, super editions that I've gotten.
Yep.
And that's it, because I don't get CDs any other way. I haven't for years.
No, it's great. I mean, and I will admit, like, they were really good about putting up the pre-order very quickly, which was nice. Because I was prepared to, like, just wait in anxiety for months, hoping I would get that collector's edition.
Yeah.
Because other Persona ones have gone out really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was able to. It went up like later that day. I got it right away. Yeah, I got my pre-order nice, and it's there. And I just felt a sense of relief. Like, okay, it's later than I would have liked, but it's coming. It's pre-ordered. I don't have to worry until it comes out. And it's just, isn't it nice to kind of just be there with it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, because I even don't like, I'm fine with it being pushed back for the, like, I don't even like, I'm not disappointed by that in any way. It's just like, whenever Persona 5 has to come, it has to come, and I'm ready and waiting for it when it does.
Yes. But I've noticed since it has been the number one seller in video games since it launched, the pre-order, yeah. On Amazon. That's right. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. So. I think it is like the cult hype around the Persona franchise in general has just grown steadily and steadily with each new release until like Persona 4 the Golden really, I think, blew it open for like, you know, obviously like the Vita did not sell gangbusters, but it sold enough that everyone who fucking has a Vita got Persona 4 the Golden because the word of mouth on it was so unanimously over the top. And so
I was talking with a listener on Twitter about this. You know, we were joking on the podcast a couple weeks ago that it would be awesome if, a la Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth, which was a Vita game they put on PS4.
Yeah.
They took Persona 4 the Golden and put it on PS4.
Yeah.
And I was talking with a fan on Twitter. He was saying that would be great. I'm like, it actually, to me, would make a ton of sense to, like, get that out in the window before Persona 5.
Yeah.
Because, Grant, again, it was a big hit on Vita, but it was a Vita-sized hit. I feel like that could be a really good just little revenue stream if you put it out on PS4 where you've got an audience of 40 million plus people.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
If they did that, I would play through the game again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be awesome. So,
but then it would kill me inside because then, like, I am... If I did another playthrough of Persona 4 the Golden, I could easily get the platinum on it, but I have to do a full playthrough of it again because there's something you can't... There's a trophy you can't get unless you get through to the very end of a New Game Plus. And so if I played through that whole game again with, like... on the PS4 without my New Game Plus on it, it would kind of destroy me because I know if I wanted to get the platinum, I've been so close and yet so far away from that platinum since fucking 2012, it is killing me inside.
Maybe it would be like they would, because Digimon shares trophies, maybe it would share your trophies and your saves.
Maybe.
And you could do your New Game Plus on the PS4.
Maybe, that would be beautiful if it did.
Yes. No, but that would be cool. I mean... Yeah, I shouldn't say I'm I'm disappointed in the people making the game. I just want Persona 5 as soon as fucking possible. Yeah. It's like I'm a junkie for this shit. But no, I think February 14th, they are going to own that month. It's a smart time to release it. I like that it's Valentine's Day. That's funny.
Yeah.
And can't wait. Also, the steelbook looks cool. The box set looks cool. The base cover art for this game is incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible. And yeah, we've known it for a while because it's the same cover art from Japan. But I just want to take that moment. It is really good cover art.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, probably my favorite cover art a Persona game has had so far.
Yeah, they've all been good.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just, I love that it's just like an illustration with all the characters. It's awesome. So, yeah. Cannot wait for that. And then later that day, we got another really awesome announcement. XCOM 2 has been announced for consoles. Xbox One and PS4 coming out September 6th.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Like, it's because those... Motherfuckers, like, if they were just going to release it on console within a year of it coming out, because that game came out in, like, February this year, why didn't they just say that? Why didn't they just say console versions coming later? God damn it. This is like, because everything around them coming out with that game is just like, yeah, it's PC only, and maybe we'll make a console version. It's like, they clearly knew that they were just going to make a fucking console version if they managed to turn it around that fast. But yeah, like, I love XCOM Enemy Unknown. I'm really excited for XCOM 2, because I really hope that... with this being a, like, delayed version of the game, that, like, all the bug fixes and stuff are wrapped up into this, because I know it was a fairly buggy game on PCs, so hopefully that is not the situation here, because XCOM Enemy Unknown was also, like, not technically very sound on Xbox 360. It was fine, but there were definitely glitches here and there.
Better than the PlayStation
Vita. Yes, better Vita than version. The completely unplayable PlayStation Vita version. Yes, any game is better than that version of that. But, yeah, XCOM 2... I will definitely play that when that comes out.
Oh, totally. I did not play XCOM Enemy Unknown, but I've seen enough of it that I want to, and fuck it, I'll skip to number two.
Sure, yeah, because there's no... Yeah. Aliens invaded. There's your story context, Jonathan. You're caught up.
I think I can get my head around that.
Yeah.
All right, first it was leaked, then it was formally announced. Injustice 2, More Gods Among Us. Is that the actual title?
No.
Okay. But they are making it Injustice 2.
Yes. And did you watch the, like, teaser trailer thing for it?
I don't give a shit, no.
Yeah, because it's...
Sorry.
Because I did not really play much of Injustice Gods Among Us. It did come out on PS Plus, so I played around as Nightwing for a little bit, because I like Nightwing a lot, and he's a playable character, and that was kind of fun. But, like, I'm not a huge Mortal Kombat guy in general. If I'm going to play a fighting game, I'd more like the kind of Street Fighter 2 anime fighter style of fighting game, or like a Soul Calibur is more my taste for that genre. But Injustice Gods Among Us was cool. I watched the entire story cutscene mode thing at like a 1 hour supercut on YouTube when that game came out, because I had an hour to kill and why not? And the story mode was stupid and fun in the way that a comic book story about like parallel universes and an evil Superman from one's new universe fighting the good Superman from our universe. I will come out for that story every time they want to tell it, because I don't care. But the teaser trailer was really amusing because it was really dark, kind of impossible to tell what was going on for most of it, because it was just basically your DC superheroes, like Flash fighting Batman, and then like Superman came in, Supergirl was there also, because I don't think she was in Injustice 1, so that's like...
I am a big Supergirl fan.
Yes, so Supergirl was there, and they're all just sort of fighting in what looks like a really dark parking garage or something. It was really hard to tell where they were, because the lighting was so dim, and it was all like CG stuff. It was clearly not in game. But the weird part about it was, and it took me a long time to figure out what was going on, is that like Flash would take out Batman, or like however the sequence went, and Batman would go down, and then he would get back up, and then all of a sudden like his suit would like kind of transform and become like more sort of like power armor looking-y, like how Batman has a bunch of those sorts of suits. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And he would like take out Flash, and then Flash's suit would transform too, and it's like every hero that then got defeated came back with like a slightly more like souped up power armor looking thing, even Superman, which is like a little bit excessive because it's fucking Superman. He doesn't need a super powerful, cool looking like robot suit thing. So just based on this practically incomprehensible teaser trailer, my guess is of what the story is some super being like the Anti-Monitor or some fucking bullshit has captured all the DC superheroes and for fun is making them fight. And then every time one of them goes down, he like reses them up more powerful, like Borg style, in that they like account for the other person's power and the super suit evolves. That's probably not what it is at all. But when I finished watching that trailer, that idea occurred to me and I thought it was a good idea. But I don't think that's what the game is.
You mentioned Supergirl.
Yes, I did.
Can I break from E3 news for a second?
Sure, go ahead. I can't stop you.
Okay, so you know Supergirl is coming back for season 2 on the CW.
Yes,
the Move Networks. And they've announced that in the season premiere, they're going to have Superman in it. Like, not as a guy on a table in a coma, which he was in the finale of Supergirl. Or really what he was in all of season 1 of Supergirl is he was Kara's texting buddy.
Yeah.
And Clark would be like...
Her pin pal.
Yeah. Clark would text her and be like, I'm proud of you, Kara. And she's like, aw, thanks, Clark.
Emoticon smiley face.
They would do that. Like, it was great to see Superman using emojis.
Yeah.
But anyway, and while that was charming, I like that they're going to have Superman actually on screen. And I just want to say, because I think... I don't remember if I said this on the air or just talking to you.
If I know where you're going, I think you said it on air. But actually, now that you said that, I don't know.
So I'm just going to say it again.
Yeah.
In case anyone from the CW is listening, or I can just send these vibes out into the universe, you have Brandon Routh,
yeah,
Superman from Superman Returns, on your Legends of Tomorrow show playing Adam.
Yes.
He played Superman in a pretty good Superman movie that was tied directly to the Christopher Reeve Superman movies.
Yes.
Just have him play Superman.
Yeah.
Because they're already on a different Earth than the Brandon Routh who is Adam. So you could just have... And then, if you have Brandon Routh play Superman, because he's already there, it's not hard. You can just have him be Superman.
And I'm sure he's probably be stoked for that idea. I would be stoked if someone asked me to play Superman.
Absolutely. And then you can have a great scene where Superman meets Adam, and they're confused because they look alike.
Yeah. But now that you've said it, because I did not know that the Adam was from a parallel universe.
Yes.
So that totally makes sense then, in that continuity.
I don't know why you wouldn't do this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fucking... That is so obvious. Because the dude's already played Superman. He knows how to play Superman. He looks good as Superman. He probably stole one of the costumes from the set and, like, has it at home and just, like, caresses it lovingly, thinking of all the missed opportunities, and then, like, has, like, a fucking picture of Henry Cavill, like, a poster on the wall that he throws knives at every day when he wakes up. Like, that's... Surely that's how Brandon Routh's life is, because he, goddamn it, like, they probably should have just made a Superman Returns 2.
Yeah.
Because how Superman has gone in film, that would have been the much better path.
I know, in fact, that the CW has access to that costume, because in the series finale of Smallville, when Superman finally becomes Superman and puts on the suit, he's wearing Brandon Routh's costume from Superman Returns.
There you go. Yeah. It's all set up. That it already is set, like, fits him. If assuming he hasn't, like, changed his body shape in, like, 8-10 years, which is probably not the case. Like, most things don't fit people over 10 years, so maybe that doesn't count.
And you can probably make a new costume. Yeah. That's okay, too.
Yeah, you can adjust the fit a bit, you know.
Yeah. He can wear a skirt, too. It can be, like, a gender equality thing.
Yeah, it's a super kill.
Yeah. Yeah, and barring that, you've got to go for some funny stunt casting. Someone suggested John Hamm on Twitter. That would be so funny and awesome.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Stunt cast the hell out of it.
Anyway. Or just confuse everyone and cast Henry Cavill, but have him play a completely different, like, super cheery, happy Superman that clearly has no connection with the DC Cinematic Universe Superman.
I'd accept that.
Yeah, I would.
Whatever.
Too.
So Supergirl, I really love that show, so I just have to talk about it. Anyway.
Right, yeah. E3. What the fucking, whoa.
Let's talk about something we didn't love as much as Supergirl. Watch Dogs 2. It leaked.
Watch_Dogs 2.
It leaked, and then the trailer leaked before their announcement.
Yeah, like, they put out their own trailer on accident as a Twitch ad, which is pretty amazing.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
This game leaked hard. Yeah. And then finally they did their announcement stream. So Watch Dogs 2, it is launching November 15th for the PS4 and Xbox One.
This year.
Yep, this will be year. It will be set in San Francisco. It will have a new hacker. It'll basically have no connections to that game nobody liked last 2014.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's an open world game. You don't have to go around and get towers, but you can hack shit.
There'll be some form of tower. They're lying. It's yeah. Ubisoft. They can't help themselves.
All right. I mean... It was funny. I don't hate the first Watch Dogs by any means. I had some fun with it. It is the game I have to credit with killing me on open world games kind of for good, it felt like.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not hostile towards the game, and I do believe them when they say they looked at the criticism, and it does look like they're trying to make it better. This looks like it's a lighter tone. The new protagonist already seems like he has a little more personality than...
Which is like, I mean...
Not any, hard.
Yeah, like... Aiden Pierce is at the bottom of the barrel of, like, bland, personality-less protagonist. That is also... Actually, he did have a personality. He was a sociopathic bullying murderer. Like, yes. He was the most unlikable fucking protagonist I have seen in anything in a very long time.
Yeah. So, anyway, I had all that on the brain. I was looking at the details. I'm like, oh, this looks like it might be kind of cool. And then I just remembered, like... It's another open world game where you go around. Okay, don't care.
Yeah, it's another Ubisoft.
And I just kind of internally checked out. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, like I'm of two minds about it. Like, part of me, because we talked about it when Watch Dogs came out. But, like, I didn't hate Watch Dogs, and I spent a lot of time early on in that game trying very hard to like it because it's hard to remember now. But before Watch Dogs came out, Everyone was so hyped up about that game, and everyone was so bummed when it got pushed. From, like, the launch of the new consoles, because it originally was going to come out on the launch of the PS4 and the Xbox One, and then they pushed it back, and it was like, well, now there's no cool new exclusive to play on our consoles, or, like, new cool new, like, next-gen game to play on our next-gen consoles. Everyone was so excited about Watch Dogs. Like, thank God Watch Dogs didn't come out when those consoles came out, because I think, like, those consoles would not have succeeded. This is just like, well, if this is what it's going to be, if this was our great game we were so hyped up at, and it's the day these consoles come out, and this game fucking blows, then it would have all ended there, tragically. Yeah. But no, it got delayed, and it came out, and it was like, okay, for a little bit. Like, some of the combat stuff was kind of fun. The powers were very, like, limited.
I found a very interesting way to play it, where I became a vigilante, and...
Profile. Oh, yeah, you had your crazy psychopath thing that you do where you just, like, murder people because they're black or whatever it is.
No, 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 Sean. Don't badmouth me like that.
Okay.
What it was you have your CTOS system and you can look up everyone's profile as you're playing.
Yeah.
And if they did anything I didn't like, I murdered them on the spot as judge, jury, and executioner.
Right, okay, that's what it was.
That's what I did. Some of those people were black, by no means all.
It's great, yeah, okay. You're just, whoever it is, just, you don't care. It's just like, if as long as, like, I don't know, they shoplifted a candy bar when they were 5 years old. Like,
sure.
That's too late for you, motherfucker.
Dead.
Judgment is coming upon you in the form of Aiden motherfucking Pierce.
Look, this is why it broke me of open world games, is I put in an obscene amount of time into that game, and between the awful story missions, I had to find a way to entertain myself. And so I went deep. And I've mostly broken myself of my psychopathic video game playing ways.
Sure, you claim, like, that.
Well, you know, you saw me play Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
And I did some pretty fucked up stuff in that game.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like sacrificing people on altars.
Yeah, I never bought the bandolier.
Yeah, but like, by the time Watch Dogs came about, I think I'd grown up and matured. You know, I'd overcome a lot of that. And Watch Dogs, just the mind-numbingness of it brought that back out in me.
Yeah. Yeah, so like Watch Dogs is a game where the combat was kind of okay, and the open world was just the most excessive open world we had ever seen to date, and maybe still has not been topped. I didn't play Assassin's Creed Unity, so maybe like looking at the map from that game looked like that maybe succeeded Watch Dogs in just pure icon fuckery on like the map of just like, I can't even navigate the map because I literally can't see the roads underneath all the collectibles and side missions and everything populating the top layer of the map. Like, it's, you've rendered yourself useless by overstuffing this game. And Watch Dogs was that. Like, Watch Dogs had all those crazy fucking mini games of like on your phone,
oh,
where it's
bad.
Like the like augmented reality bullshit in the game, and like you could, remember there was a mini game where you could play as like a spider tank thing and jump around and blow shit up.
Oh god, that was weird.
I spent a lot of time thinking about Watch Dogs 1 after Watch Dogs 2 came out and dredging up all these dark memories of like all the, and like one of their collectibles was just to like drive up to a moderately famous building in Chicago, and then it would be like hotspot, and it's like, there you go, that's a, what a fun collectible that was.
Yeah.
So that's my, so, that was Watch Dogs 1.
So barring extraordinary reviews, I think it's safe to say neither of us are probably going to play this game.
Yeah.
I am, however, very interested in this because you can understand why Ubisoft doesn't just want to kill the IP. It was their first...
Yeah, and it did sell very well on pre-orders mostly.
But I am very curious to see how this one does because I don't think they're salvaging this if this one also disappoints.
Yeah.
You probably have to leave it behind. Maybe it'll be an Assassin's Creed situation where the sequel is just really good to
I hope so, yeah.
It could be. I wouldn't, you know, there's nothing but talented people working at Ubisoft. I don't blame it on, like, a lack of talent working there. They're clearly very good at what they do. You know, Watch Dogs, I think, was actually probably an example of a game designed too much by committee that just kind of got, you know, bogged down. And I did like hearing from the, I think, game director or producer when they announced it. On the PlayStation blog, he answered some questions and just talked about, we're aware of some of the issues that people had with this one, and here's what we're trying to do. And, you know, I will give them the benefit of the doubt. That doesn't mean I'm going to go out and pre-order it.
Yeah,
but
this is definitely a do-not-pre-order game. But I do think they're talking up this game fairly well in terms of, like, saying that there are non-lethal options to take people out, I think, is a big thing. Like, expanding the hacking options is, it seems interesting, and hopefully that pans out, because that was kind of like what they, how they talked about the hacking abilities in Watch Dogs 1 is how kind of they're talking about the walking hacking abilities in Watch Dogs 2, and maybe this time it'll actually work that way, and it won't just be, well, I can blow up the steam pipe that is under all the different city streets, and then I can like make this forklift go up and down, and there's like 5 or 6 powers that you unlock, and that's kind of all the hacking is. Like, hopefully these new expanded options are actually meaningful in the gameplay.
Yeah.
And then I also think, like, at least, because the Ubisoft has always been a company that with like their Assassin's Creed side of like their like open world third person games that Watch Dogs kind of got wrapped up into, they are like clinically very bad at telling stories. Like, sometimes a decent, half-decent story sort of breaks through, like Assassin's Creed 4, but on the whole, they are just, like, very, very bad at telling stories in their games, and maybe Watch Dogs 2 is actually going to be semi-competent in that it looks like they at least occurred to them that if the main thing that we're selling the gameplay on is all this hacking stuff, maybe we should actually make that relevant to the narrative in some way.
Yes.
Because in Watch Dogs 1, it had nothing to do with the story. Like, nothing to do with, like, you weren't, like, taking down the city. Like, the city had nothing to do with, like, the plot of, like the city OS thing. That had nothing to do with what you were doing. You were just, like, avenging your dead niece or fucking whatever bullshit, like, comic book, bad 90s comic book protagonist motive they pulled out of the hat for that one, you know? Like, in Watch Dogs 1, it was just, the hacking stuff was completely meaningless. Aiden Pierce, they did not seem like a dude who had any, would know how to hack anything. He seemed like a guy who, like, just spent all of his time, like, crawling around in alleys murdering random people. You know, that's, like, all he did. Whereas, like, this new protagonist seems like he is part of, like, the DedSec hacking community thing. Like, they're pulling from hacking culture. They are maybe, and probably are going to completely fuck that up, because as a French-Canadian studio, I think Ubisoft has also typically shown themselves not understanding America, and like the, like their Watch Dogs version of Chicago felt very sort of off. Like, some of their stuff in their racing game, The Crew, like, was weird. Like, there's just depiction of America that feels foreign. So I don't have a lot of faith that they'll actually nail that hacking subculture thing. But at least they're trying. And that's way more than could have been said for Watch Dogs 1 in the story department.
So. Yeah. I hold out hope for this game. Yeah. I really do.
I want it to be good.
I want it to be good. I want Ubisoft to be good. Because yeah. I think when they hit and when they do good work, they do great work. I still... Assassin's Creed 4 is one of my favorite games ever.
Yeah, it's very good.
Up until The Witcher, it might even be my favorite just like generic open world kind of game. And granted, that's because I love nautical adventures. And I started like... It was funny, when I got my Xbox One, I got a free copy of Assassin's Creed 4, which I'd already played to absolute completion on PS4. I'm like, fuck, I really love this game. And I started playing it again, and then I started reading the Master and Commander novels, and I just got into a nautical binge, because I love that stuff. Yeah. So when they do it, they can do it so well. And I would like if Watch Dogs 2 was maybe the beginning of them turning a corner, because they've pushed Assassin's Creed off to next year.
Yeah.
They're clearly listening to people for Watch Dogs 2. Maybe they'll turn a corner. I don't think it's out of the realm of reason.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, like, this is the game you really shouldn't pre-order, because fool me once, shame on you, be soft. Fool me twice, shame on me, be soft.
I feel like I have to end the podcast there.
No, yeah. But I have more to say. I threw that one a bit too early, but I didn't think it would be relevant again. So I had to spin it when I could.
Oh, man. This is going to be like, you know, every show... has that moment where someone's like, no, that would have been the perfect finale and ending point. And then they went on for years.
We went on for two seasons too long. We should have just stopped it right there.
This is like our Buffy season 5 finale.
Yeah, exactly.
Is you making a terrible Ubisoft pun.
Yeah, I think it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Sean, you're going to love this next piece of news.
Okay.
In Europe, a trademark has been filed for Gwent the Witcher card game.
Yes, it has.
So, I mean, this has not been an announcement. I'm sure we'll hear about it soon. It sounds like, similar to something like Hearthstone, we're going to get a standalone game of Gwent, which makes total sense, because the first time I think you ever mentioned Gwent on the podcast, you were talking about how it feels like its own game.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I am someone who typically does not give a flying fuck about like random card minigames in like big RPGs and stuff. Like, I think it was Final Fantasy VIII was the one that had, I forget, like Triple Triad or something. That was just like,
oh, I don't
fuck
remember.
Off with that. That bullshit is awful. But like, there is like sort of like, well, it was basically just like a slightly modified blackjack called Pazok in Knights of the Old Republic. I played that a little bit there because there's
some quests. I played poker in Red Dead because what I could do is get my hand or whatever and then stand up, kill everyone at the table, and take their money.
Yeah, that's
what I would do.
You could do that. But in Witcher 3, their like Gwent minigame was one I ignored for a while, and then like because I just didn't understand it, because it's like the rules of Gwent are fairly complicated and it's very different. Like, there's no other card game I can think of that's like Gwent. Like, it is almost like a mixture of like Magic the Gathering and Blackjack in a like kind of crazy way.
It's also like chess in that you win in a very indirect way.
Yeah, that it's a lot about sort of like tactically retreating and like figuring out when to like give up a round so that like to keep your card advantage and all that stuff. Like, it is a game that's like, it's not insanely deep, but it is way deeper than you would think of when you first play it and just like look at it, it's like, oh, whatever. And then when I did, like, sort of, like, figure out Gwent and do it, then I went, like, back and was like, okay, fuck it. Now I have to go through the entirety of Velen and go to all these different towns and go to every random person I run up to and challenge them to Gwent. And then now, in Blood and Wine, what's, like, great is the every time you just run up to someone, I feel like for every single person now, they recorded a completely different line for Geralt of asking them to play Gwent, whereas it was, like, for most of them, it was a generic line in the base Witcher 3. Now it's, like, everything is, like... Yeah, this may sound a little weird, but would you be up for a round of Gwent? Like, Geralt is some sort of insane fanatic about Gwent.
It is one of my favorite things about The Witcher 3, is imagining Geralt of Rivia wandering around the world collecting Gwent cards and challenging random passersby, and yet it oddly fits his character.
It does, like, as someone who has now read all the books available in English, I have to say, the Gwent thing totally 100% makes sense. Like, it is honestly... Like, I started a, like, new game that I, like, played a little bit in Witcher 3 before Blood and Wine came out, and, like, I did all the Gwent stuff in there, too. Not because I needed to play a lot more Gwent, because I've played plenty of Gwent, and, like, all of those were, like the original deck that I was using again, because I, like, would switch things up to keep it interesting. But, like, I played Gwent there just because that's what his character is like, he's getting old, and Geralt's sort of like this, like, funny old, like, sort of grumpy man that's just, like, he kind of gets caught up in whatever this thing is, and he just sort of has fun with it, and he figures out he's kind of good at it, and so he just keeps on doing it all the time. So I really love Gwent in Witcher 3, and I think the idea of them, hopefully, like, what this is them just, like, expanding it out into its, like, full own little game that you can play, and really sort of, like, balancing it a lot better, because the other thing about Gwent is that when you do figure out how to play it, that is a game you can fucking break completely, and the AI will never be able to stop you. Like, the way that spy cards function in that game are so ludicrously overpowered that it's like, the AI just doesn't even really know how to deal with it. But yeah, like, if you sort of, like, figure out the rules and balance it up a bit and shake things up and flesh it out with more different kinds of cards, I think Gwent could actually be really fun, and I can see myself dipping into that and, like, playing some of that every here and there, like, depending on the quality of the game they put out.
I think it'll be a blast, yeah. I think it's a great idea, because it's, like, it's this asset that's just sitting there in the game, and I have had a problem with Gwent where it's too intimidating for me in the main game, yeah. Where, like, the meat of The Witcher 3 is difficult and, like, big enough that I feel like I don't have the mental energy to put out and, like, figure out this complicated card game. And I would like to, it's just there's not enough hours in the day. But if it was its own game, I feel like I could get into it.
Man, it's so good when you just, like, completely stomp a motherfucker in Gwent and you end the game. Like, I had one in Blood and Wine yesterday where I ended the game where I literally, the last round, I was able to use a card with, like, Scorch card, which wiped out my opponent's entire board because I was able to, like, get all their attack values to one, and then I filled up my whole board, and I ended the game with, like, over 200 points, and they had zero, and it was the hardest I had ever stopped a motherfucker in Gwent, and it felt so good. Even if it is just the computer, it felt just like I so thoroughly can dominate in that game that it just, it's really gratifying.
Yeah.
I feel like it puts me at one with Geralt, because I think he's really happy that he's so good at Gwent.
I do like imagining that in whatever ending you got for The Witcher 3, maybe not the sad ending, in any of the happier endings, he's retired and he's just off playing Gwent in the pub all day, and then he
comes like home. While Triss is in the court, like, working, he goes into town and is like, "What's up, guys? Up for a round of Gwent?" And then they give him a weird look, kind of nod at him, which is how all the people accept Gwent rounds in the game for whatever reason.
It's kind of like, there's the old gender stereotype in stories of, like, the man goes out and does the work and the woman goes out and, like, plays pachinko or something.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. It's like Triss is out saving the world and Geralt just goes and plays in the pub Gwent. It's so awesome.
It's really
I love it. All right. Xbox One.
Yes.
They used to have all this stuff about TV with the system.
Oh, yeah. They Xbox used to have a TV studio that they were going to make TV shows with.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, no, it did not.
They announced at some point in the lifespan of this console that they were going to do a TV DVR functionality for all the core demo Xbox people who record live TV.
Yeah.
They've ditched that feature.
Why? Oh, no. I was going to use that so heavily.
I think that was the reaction of literally everyone online. I saw no blowback to this.
It's like the reaction online was like, wait, they were going to do that? Because it's like, oh yeah, they did say that in like 2013, didn't they? Yeah. It's amazing when a company can say that, oh, this thing we said we were going to do, we're actually not going to do it, and have nobody care. There's literally no internet outrage when, like, No Man's Sky being pushed back a month is like death threat worthy. Them, like, Microsoft basically lying to you about a feature they're going to put in is like, eh, whatever.
It just underlines how fundamentally and just insanely they misread their core audience.
Yeah.
With the original ideas for the Xbox One. Why in the year 2013 were you launching a device built entirely around cable and satellite TV?
It is really funny when you say it like that.
I mean, it's not that cable and satellite are like completely dead or anything. There are plenty of people who use that. Most of them don't own an Xbox One and play it all the time.
Yeah. It was such a perfunctory feature for the console, but...
But it was the main feature when they launched.
Yes, but, you know, so was the Kinect, and here we are today, and it's like... I guess you can still technically get a Kinect if you buy it separately, but they don't make it easy. They don't want you to.
All right. Another thing that was leaked by Microsoft, but then was formally announced the next day... is, and we've had other leaks. Kotaku, I think, had a report on this.
Yeah.
Destiny, Rise of Iron, the new expansion, the follow-up to last year's The Taken King, which was a big hit, both on both of our top tens last year.
Yes, definitely.
It was my number two, I think, and I only did a top five, but it was a great game. Rise of Iron, it's coming September 20th to the PS4 and Xbox One, and interestingly, only the PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah.
They are ditching the last-gen consoles. It makes sense. It's kind of shitty, but oh well. It kind of... Frankly, if you bought Destiny for one of those consoles and didn't expect this was coming, you didn't do your research.
Yeah.
But it's too bad. I mean, I feel kind of bad for those people, but you should get a PS4.
Yeah, like, it's long enough now that it's like, I can really understand why Bungie would not want to have to continue making stuff that will function on the older consoles as well, because that game... Destiny already has, like, a severe content pipeline problem. Like, all the, like, reporting that came out about that game afterwards was a lot about, like... Yeah, a lot of the systems and the programs and stuff that they created to make the game were not very good at making content fast and allowing you to test content quickly. So it's, like, having to do that and pile that stuff onto four different systems. I can really understand why they'd be like, you know what? Fuck that shit. Like, there are 40 million, over 40 million PS4s on the market right now. I think it's fine to move on.
Yes, I think so too. I'm very excited to see what they can do with the game without that limitation. It's not like the frame rate's going to change or anything, but I think you could have more enemies on screen. They're going to have a whole new environment. That could be cool.
Yeah.
The new enemy type might be a kind of enemy type they couldn't do on the old systems.
Sure,
it's very interesting. And I loved the trailer. You know, it's a big meaty update. Doesn't look like it might be quite as big as The Taken King. But it's hard.
I mean, at the end of the trailer, they like flash all this like, new blah 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 blah, and all the stuff on there. Like they did say like new area, like new weapons, new armor, new enemy type, new raid, new strikes, like all that good stuff. So it does seem like if maybe it's not quite as big as the Taken King, but it does definitely seem to be a Taken King style expansion and not like the pre-Taken King things that they did, which were so slim. This seems like it is a substantial piece of content, which I'm happy about.
It's $30. They have not announced something similar to what they did with The Taken King, where they basically just relaunched the game and you bought it as The Taken King.
Yeah, because it does not seem like they're going back and trying to retool any of the older stuff for this.
No. They are bringing back Gjallarhorn, however you say that.
Gjallarhorn. It's like Mjolnir, Thor's hammer.
Gjallarhorn, everyone's favorite rocket launcher, and now it's black. You get that if you pre-order the game, so that should be fun.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just buy it the day before it comes out, because I don't have any burning need to pre-order DLC, but there you go.
Yeah, pre-ordering DLC is such a bizarre concept. But.
Whatever. Anyway, so that'll be coming out. Very excited. I have not really played Destiny at all this year, because it's had nothing, which is too bad.
Yeah.
But I also I love the Iron Banner stuff, so I like that they're, like, building out the mythology of that.
Yeah, I like that they're, like, that Lord Saladin guy has always seemed really cool to me, and I like the idea of him getting that sort of, like, Taken King treatment of building out his character a bit, the way that they did for, like, the Cade and everyone, the class trainers in Destiny.
Yeah, I love Destiny, so this is awesome news.
Yeah, because I have not gone back to the game since, basically, I finished with the Taken King, so I'm excited to be able to jump back into that with new content.
Absolutely. All right, so I should say before we do these last two pieces of news, we started recording this episode at 7 p.m. on Friday night. That was the cutoff for news. So if anything new has come out, we don't know about it.
Yeah.
So this is as of end of day, Friday. The day started with a very interesting announcement. Andrew House of Sony confirmed in an interview with the Financial Times that they are making a new version of the PlayStation 4. He did not use the term PlayStation 4.5. He used the term like a higher-end PS4. He confirmed a few important details, that it will exist alongside the current PlayStation 4. Both will continue to be sold throughout the lifespan of the console.
Yeah.
Everything will be made for PlayStation 4, but his hope is that most games will have a version for the higher-end system. Basically everything we knew so far, or assumed so far. But he says they're not announcing it at E3.
Yeah, which is very surprising to me. I think everyone just sort of expected that they would. And it's a very interesting move for them to sort of push that out when, like, also, like, we know for sure now that, like, Microsoft has a similar project in the works that seems like it's not quite as far along as what Sony was doing, but they have an Xbox One 2 thing that they're developing, Xbox One Scorpio.
And I think that's it. I think Sony does not need to do this. And if Microsoft is going to do this and they're not doing it until next year, why would Sony do it this year? Just wait them out and press your advantage. See what their plans are. See if you can adjust. They have all the time in the world.
Yeah.
They have the advantage. There's no reason for them to try to rush this thing out So I do understand the move. I'm sure they have plenty of other stuff for E3. It is weird just because I think we were expecting this was going to be the centerpiece of their E3.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about what that will be now. I'm also curious about what Microsoft says at E3.
Yeah, it definitely, it's a really, like, sort of, like, interesting kind of sly move, it feels like. Just, yeah. Like, everyone was anticipating this one big thing, and then Sony just sort of subtly pivots, and then all of a sudden it's like, I felt like going in, like, we're a few days away from E3 now, and before today, I felt like I kind of knew what to expect, more or less, from E3. Like, obviously, there's always going to be surprises, but I was like, yeah, I kind of get what the... probably what the gist of the big conferences are going to be. And then now that Sony did this, I'm like, well, maybe they have something else that they're like planning to sort of fill that gap. Maybe they're going to push their PSVR stuff harder than I expected. Like, there's a lot of different things that they can do. And it definitely puts Microsoft in an interesting position as well, because Microsoft has not officially confirmed their Xbox One 2 project, whereas, like, now Sony has now sort of, like, said, we're doing it in, like, the most sort of, like, yeah, we're doing it way possible without trying to make it a big announcement.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And, yeah, it's most interesting because, whereas PlayStation, I think we understand some of the reasons they're experimenting with it. They don't really need it. Xbox needs it. They released an underpowered, misjudged console.
Poorly marketed.
It's had a lot of problems. If they want to have any kind of hand in this fight, they need to do this. And, like, frankly, even though I use my Xbox less and I like my PS4 more, if I were to get a beefier version of one of those two consoles, it would be the Xbox. Because I have no complaints about how the PS4 runs. The Xbox is frequently a pile of shit.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's interesting. I think, hopefully, Sony is seems like they recognize that. That they are not the ones who need to be doing this in the way Microsoft needs to be doing this.
Yeah, it's a move that makes me very interested to see how their presentation is going to go. You know, like, it's just like, now I feel like there is kind of a black spot in my, oh, this is what it was going to be. And it's like, maybe it's not going to be that.
What's the Sony equivalent of Amiibos?
Sonybos.
And it's just Nathan Drake and Sully and Sly Cooper. Yeah. And
it's like when they tried to make that Super Smash Brothers, like, kind of rip-off game, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, I think it was called.
Yes.
And that was when you realized, like, Sony does not have the library of mascot kind of characters that Nintendo does. And then when you put that on top of, they also don't own the rights to all those characters anymore. That's like, it definitely made that game sort of like a question mark. And so I don't think that they could make a Sonybo line.
Okay. But I like the name.
Yeah.
All right, last piece of news. Another Microsoft leak. They're really bad at this week. Halo Wars 2, which we have known about since last year, it sounds like it will have an open beta the week of E3, June 20th to the end of the month, the 30th, assumedly for Xbox One, maybe also for PC, because they have said it's coming to PC, to Windows 10 specifically. But yeah, they're going to beta Halo Wars 2. Seems like it could be kind of their big, and now Halo Wars 2, and you can play it now kind of moment. Which, Halo Wars, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this. If there's a beta, I will play it.
I'm very curious about what it's going to be. Excited is not the word I would use.
Did I say excited?
Yes, you said excited.
Oh, okay. I'm interested in this. Yeah. I'm curious about this. Can't be worse than Halo 5. But
that is so not true. Okay. That is so completely not fucking true.
Okay, good point.
I think it's also important to remember that the studio ensemble that made Halo Wars was the last game they made. So it's not so... Like, it is... I have no idea. Like, Halo Wars 2 could be amazing, but it could also be really terrible. There's no way to anticipate what the quality of that game's going to be.
Anyway, the point was, kind of a weird game to do this sort of thing with, if that's what they're doing, just because Halo is a big property, but Halo Wars is sort of this niche RTS kind of thing.
Yeah, because honestly, if you did not play Halo Wars with, like, multiplayer with two people who are your friends... That was not a very good game. Like, the campaign was really bad, and the multiplayer on your own with, like, randoms... was not very much fun. I had a lot of fun with that game because I was in high school and I was in a unique position to have other people that also loved Halo enough to be stupid enough to just buy Halo Wars. That, like, the 3v3 multiplayer online with that, if you knew who you were playing with, that could be a lot of fun. But that was the only way that I had fun with that game. So,
yeah, this will be interesting to see. But that's the last piece of news we have.
Yep.
Pretty interesting slate of stuff. Am I just crazy? Is it recency bias? Was this, like, the busiest week of pre-E3 news ever?
Maybe. Like this does happen every year. And it does. And every year it does feel like this is, like, the most it's been. I can't tell if that's just because you always forget that this happens all the time, because it just gets lost in the like miasma of the day I kill myself on watching all these press conferences, or if maybe like it is sort of escalating because E3 is like sort of like diminishing over the course of time, basically, because it's becoming less important with other conventions and stuff taking its place.
Yeah.
So maybe it is more this year, maybe it's not. It's hard to tell.
Hard to tell. It's made it harder for me to know even what's kind of left for E3. There will be surprises. You know, can't wait for Shenmue 4. Yeah. But, just kidding. I'm going to announce it and kickstart that before Shenmue 3 is even out.
Yeah.
Bold. Break the system down. Anyway, but Sean, you've put together some notes.
I have.
On what we might see next week.
Yes, I have.
All right, so Sean, what you got?
Yes. So I've made a outline here of... It's basically formatted by all the different companies that sort of have their big press conferences, and I made a list of things that I feel like are pretty confirmed to be in the press conference, and then I then made a separate list of, like, things that might be there. I don't know, my speculative list. And I just want to go through these. A lot of these I don't think we need to stop and talk about, but I do think it's sort of just interesting to take stock of where things are and where things might change. And before I get into that sort of list of the press conferences, I have 2 points up top that I couldn't find a place to fit them because they don't fit with where the press conferences are. One is I'm curious if this is the year we're going to see what Monolith is going to do next, and they are the studio that made Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor, which is a game I enjoyed, did not love, but got a lot of praise for its Nemesis system, rightly so, because it was very interesting. And we haven't heard anything from them since then. And so a Shadow of Mordor 2 seems like it would be a smart thing for Warner Brothers to do because that game did do very well commercially and critically. And I wonder if that's going to be what we see from this E3, like, because it just felt like we haven't seen anything from that studio.
They could recreate more scenes from the Peter Jackson movies.
With different characters, yes. They could do that.
Who will say, I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you?
I mean, probably the Glorfindel would be my guess. That's the character I would pick, honestly. Because, I mean, if we can't cut Glorfindel out of everything. I mean, there's a huge space in that character's lifespan in the movie universe we just know nothing about.
Exactly.
Honestly, Glorfindel should just be the star of Shadow of Mordor 2, in my opinion. But who knows? Like, that was just a thought I had of, like, what are games that we are likely to see here. And then also, this might be too early, but we also might see, finally, what is Rocksteady working on. And I don't know where we would see that at E3, but, you know, Arkham Knight came out a year ago now. It'll be basically a year from, like, when E3 starts, more or less. So, that studio's been doing something.
A Superman game.
That's what all the rumors have been. And because there have been those many rumors since, like, Arkham City came out... I don't believe them.
I don't believe them either. It's what I want, though.
Yeah, I would love that. Like, I'm really excited to see what Rocksteady does next. And I think this is probably a bit too early, but...
Probably.
But maybe. But we'll see. Maybe. Keep your...
Suicide Squad tie-in game.
Exactly, yeah. They just get wrapped up right into the Warner Brothers movie machine and just, like, have to make shitty movie tie-in games.
Okay,
okay.
I got it.
Okay.
You play as the Joker...
Okay.
You know how the Grand Theft Auto games allow you to tattoo yourself?
Yes.
That's what you can do. You can get whatever Joker tattoos you want. They're all stupid. You can get your grill, all that stuff. It's just great. You can make your own shitty Warner Brothers movie.
Great, yeah. Okay, the Rocksteady's Jared Leto's The Joker, presented by Warner Brothers.
I don't know if I would play it, but I would watch Let's Plays of it.
I would fucking play it. Okay. I don't care. That would be insane.
All right, what else you got?
Okay, so now let's go in. First, the press conference, Electronic Arts, the EA. They are not really at E3 on the show floor, but they are doing a press conference. First up, Titanfall 2 has been confirmed. That will be a game. They will show it. It'll probably also be at one of the other Microsoft or Sony press conferences.
So I would anticipate that'll be a November game.
Yeah, probably. That'll probably be November.
It's weird. I really enjoyed Titanfall 1. I don't know if there's a place in my life for Titanfall 2. Like, Overwatch has recalibrated everything
else.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I don't know. Like, here's a big question.
Yes.
If they are making Titanfall 2, do you think they add a campaign this time?
I really hope so. Like, that would get my, like, sort of, like, hopes up for this game a lot higher because I didn't have access really much to an Xbox One to play Titanfall 1, so I didn't play it. Like, I mean, I touched it here and there, but I never really, like, played it. So I sort of, like, skirted around the edges of that game. And then Advanced Warfare also came out that year. And I just sort of, like, expended all my competitive multiplayer Call of Duty-style shooter energy into Advanced Warfare. But I haven't really had a game like that since Advanced Warfare. So maybe I will get into Titanfall 2 since it will come out on the Xbox One and PS4. But, like, yeah, if it does have a campaign and that campaign looks good and interesting, like, that does a lot for me. Even if, like, everyone else is all into the multiplayer stuff, like, god damn it, like, I really loved Wolfenstein The New Order. I really, really loved Doom. And even if it wasn't great, I still enjoyed the campaign to Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, and I probably wouldn't have gotten that game if it didn't have one, because I like that time. Even if it's not an amazing first-person shooter campaign, I like to play first-person shooter campaigns. And if it's just, like, a 6 to 8 hour thing that has, like, a big, cool part that's, like, really spectacular with some crazy shit going on with robots and mechs, that's what I want. I want to have that before I jump into my multiplayer, you know?
I will say, you know, I really enjoyed Titanfall 1. It's a really good multiplayer shooter. I don't see where a campaign really fits into it the way it's built. I just feel like the mechanics are for multiplayer. And maybe they could make it work. I would play it if they did. I will probably play this game either way, because I did have a lot of fun with Titanfall 1. And this time I could play it on PS4, and there would probably be less tearing.
Yeah, probably.
Which is my number one. Titanfall had a lot of tearing.
Yes, it did. Yeah, it definitely did on the Xbox One.
Anyway, even more on the 360, because I started playing that one on the 360.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Really? Jesus.
It was actually fine. I mean, it looks a lot better on the Xbox One. It was a pretty damn impressive port of something that was clearly made for next gen.
Yeah.
Anyway, just let's move on. What else EA got?
Lots Battlefield 1. Yeah, we don't need to talk about it. We talked about that. Read the poem called Dulcet Decorum Est if you want to, like, learn about World War One and, like, the tragedy of World War One. That I'll leave it at that. Wilfred Owens was a very great poet. He died when he was, like, 22. Because he was in World War One. Next up, Mass Effect Andromeda. I think it's definitely going to have to be there in a substantial capacity, because the only time we've seen Mass Effect Andromeda at all was, like, at E3, was, like, a little tiny teaser trailer with, like, a rock guitar thing.
Do you think we get a release date? Like, early next year?
Probably. I feel like that it got pushed back at some point, they confirmed, for 2017. So I would not be surprised if they gave us a solid, like, day release date and some, like, significant gameplay look at it. Because I feel like Mass Effect Andromeda is going to be the linchpin of the EA press conference this year.
Yeah, it would have to be, I feel like. Yeah. That game has been in development a long time.
Yeah, for a very long time. It's been a long time since Mass Effect 3 came out. So I'm really excited to see what, like, Mass Effect Andromeda is, as, like, structurally as a video game. So, but then after that, so you can tell here, Audrey, I'm just going to, like, to break down behind the scenes on my outline. You can tell that I reformatted this list to then fit with how the press conferences went, because EA was actually the last one I wrote, and I could tell I was getting really punchy by the time I got to the end of this outline, because my next bullet point says Star Wars Battlefront 2 will premiere in 5 bullet points. Because that is a joke. At last year's EA press conference, like, every 5 minutes, a little thing would pop up at the bottom of the screen that would say, Star Wars Battlefront will premiere in 27 minutes. And, like, it would pop up in the middle of game trailers and shit, and it was really obnoxious. Star Wars Battlefront 2, we probably won't see a Battlefront 2, but we'll definitely see Battlefront DLC and, like, talk about Star Wars Battlefront, because while
no one else is.
Well, I mean, the world was not enthused, and we were not enthused by that game. It sold a lot. It sold, like, 10 million copies or something ridiculous. It made them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it also didn't seem like they put that much money into the game based on, like, the content offering.
No.
And it seemed like they made that game, like, had a really fast turnaround on it. So I think we're going to see a lot of Star Wars Battlefront going forward. I feel like that, like, DICE, the Battlefield studio, sort of made a pact with the devil, in that I feel like they are just going to be trapped making Star Wars Battlefront games for a long time now because of how well that game sold, with, like, especially compared to what seems like the amount of time they put into it, which is smaller than for a lot of these other games. But yeah, we'll see Star Wars Battlefront stuff. We will also see other Star Wars stuff, I'm pretty sure. Hopefully, I really want to see more of the Visceral game that has Amy Hennig, who was, like, the sort of the head on the first three Uncharted games. I really want to see what that game is. They've also said that Respawn, which is also the studio that makes Titanfall 2, is now a two-studio game. And a while ago, they announced that Respawn is working on a third-person action Star Wars game. I have no idea what that entails.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it has been a long time since there was a Star Wars game that came out that interested me, because Star Wars Battlefront is the, like, only AAA Star Wars game in years because of, like, how all that LucasArts stuff went down. So I'm jonesing for a really good Star Wars game on these new platforms, and Battlefront just so didn't do it.
LEGO Star Wars 7, later this month. I've got it pre-ordered.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm looking for. That game might be great, I don't know, but, like, I want... my Knights of the Old Republic, I want my Republic Commando. There was, like, the like PS2 and Xbox generation had such a great list of fucking awesome Star Wars games with Battlefront, Battlefront 2, Republic Commando, Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2. Like, even the fucking Star Wars Episode 3 movie tie-in game was actually really good. Like, not 10 out of 10, but like an 8 out of 10 kind of game. Like,
yeah.
That was a great game to be, or a great time to be a Star Wars fan and also be a fan of video games, and it's been so dark since then.
Yeah. I'm getting LEGO Star Wars 7 because I can play it couch co-op with my brother, and I think that'll be a really fun thing to do. But I understand, it's not like a mainline Star Wars game. Yeah. Anyway, so is that it for EA?
There will be a lot of sports games. Sports games will be there. FIFA will be there. Some NBA game will be there. Madden will be there.
Did you notice this month...
Wait, no, they don't make basketball games, do they? No.
Who makes the basketball games? Because I was going to ask.
2K does.
Okay, because PS Plus this month, you get Gone Home, which is awesome.
Yes.
And you also get NBA 2K16, which my hard drive is full right now, but I'm totally going to download that game because I think that's hilarious that that's a free PS Plus game, and I want to play some shitty basketball.
And I'm pretty sure it was 2K16 because there's two basketball games. Wait, no! EA does make a basketball game. They make NBA Live, which is the basketball game that everyone hates, which they did not make for a very long time, that then they brought back with this console generation, and then people don't like it.
Okay, so we got the good one on PS Plus.
Yes, but NBA 2K16, I'm pretty sure that is the one that has, from what I understand, is a really hilarious, like, melodramatic story mode that Spike Lee was in some way involved with. I do not want to project about the extent of it, because I have... read what the story mode is, and she's fucking crazy.
Because when I went to get that today on PS Plus for free, it was it said a Spike Lee joint.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't wait to play this thing.
Yeah. When I have more time, I will probably also dig into NBA 2K16 and see how that story mode stuff pans out. Because again, reading like a plot synopsis thing online, it seemed like it was fucking weird.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So there will be a lot of sports. As I say here on the outline, there will be sports up the wazoo. I then also make a joke saying Pele to the Pelocalypse because Pele was on the EA stage for what felt like an eternity at last year's conference. Pele will probably not show up. They'll probably get some other like football star that I don't recognize, and he will be on the stage. And then there will be mobile games. So that is what will definitely be there. And then for my speculation, is there going to be a new Need for Speed? I don't know.
No.
I don't really care that much, but it might be there. I feel like the last Need for Speed game and the Need for Speed game before that were both, neither of them were very good, so.
I'm saying no for now. I feel like they've got enough others. That's a really full slate you just read.
Yeah, definitely. So then also, I wonder if there's going to be a new heartfelt indie game like Unraveled, which was also that game that came out that was premiered at E3 last year with EA, that then came out this year and nobody really liked it that much. But
yes, there will be.
There will probably be. Yes, I agree with that. Then will there be a new, different BioWare game teased? Maybe Dragon Age 4, maybe a completely new IP. What do you think?
No. Mass Effect cast too large a shadow. That'd be crazy.
I agree, and I think it'd be too large or too soon for them to try to do another Dragon Age thing, and I feel like BioWare's kind of like ratcheting down of all the games that they're trying to put out. Okay, then here's another question I have. What celebrity do you think will voice the ridiculously over-the-top FIFA trailer this year? Because last year, it was Idris Elba. The year before that, it was Patrick Stewart. Now, here I have two ones that I think are like sort of new and hot and might be there, because it also has to be some sort of like UK related celebrity because it's FIFA. Okay. But one I had to say is Michael Fassbender, maybe. The other, Benedict Cumberbatch, I think would be an unusual choice, but he's hot right now. Everyone wants the Cumberbatch.
I know who it is.
Who is it, do you think?
And you're going to say I'm right when I say it.
Okay.
Tom Hiddleston.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Tom Hiddleston. I'm calling it now. Tom Hiddleston.
As meaningless as it is, I am writing it into the outline because I think you are right. I'm going to write it and I'm going to embolden that because you are right. It will be Tom Hiddleston. Okay, the next...
Rumored for the new James Bond. He was in that miniseries. He's fucking Loki. Everything's coming up, Tom.
Yeah. He's got a smooth, sexy voice because I feel like they've been doing different styles. But it's like Patrick Stewart is very imperial. You know, Idris Elba is like intense and gravelly. And then Hiddleston is just smooth and sexy, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think the Benedict Cumberbatch moment has not passed, but like... quelled a little, but this is like the year of Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, I very much agree with you on that choice. Then another speculative thing, will there be a new PopCap game? Will we get another like PopCap dude come out on stage and be very awkwardly, overly enthusiastic about something, where last year it was Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. The year before that, he ended his presentation by going, "Peggle 2! Ha!" And then, like, fist-bumping the air and walking off stage. And it was very sad.
So you know how Peggle, the original game, they had Peggle, then they had Peggle Knights.
I don't know that, but sure.
That's like the sequel where it's the same characters, but now it's at night and it's a different set of maps.
Okay.
I played a lot of Peggle.
Okay. I played a lot of Peggle with a mod I downloaded on World of Warcraft while I was riding on Griffins from, like, different places, because you could just play Peggle in World of Warcraft while I was, like, waiting for, like, people to, like, group up for dungeons. So I played Peggle, but it's all in that context, which is very weird.
I think we get Peggle 2 Knights. That's my prediction.
Okay, yeah, I think that's because it's way too soon for PvZGW3, the hot sequel to PvZGW2, which is also, in turn, a sequel to the surprise cult hit PvZGW.
Yes, but I think we have to do some more Peggle 2, because Peggle 2 had some DLC and it was good. Not nearly enough.
Yeah, I mean, but you don't think they're going to go full Peggle 3 yet.
No, they're going to save that.
Okay.
Peggle, this is like Smash Bros. You do it once in a generation.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Peggle for 3DS and Wii U. Okay. So that's basically it for EA. I also have another speculative thing that's just like a funny thing, because everyone like really wants them to make a new Skate game. Everyone wants them to make Skate 4, but they're never going to make Skate 4. So I put in speculative Skate 4 question mark. That's never going to happen. Give it up.
Okay.
The Skate games were kind of okay. I played a little bit of them once. But that's never going to happen. Next, Bethesda. Like, surprisingly, Bethesda comes back with another press conference this year. They did it last year because they had Fallout 4 in Doom, and none of us understood in that equation that Doom was the game to get way more excited about than Fallout 4, which was okay and fine, and I enjoyed it, but it was also 100% what we expected it. And I remember watching the Doom trailer or the Doom demo from last year's E3 and being like, that looks okay. Like, I maybe will get that if it gets good reviews. I had no idea. I was so naive. But yeah,
we all were shocked.
Yeah, this year they've come back, but this I don't really have any speculation stuff, because everything that is in their conference has basically already been leaked. So we know they are making a remaster of Skyrim, so that's going to be there, obviously, and that's whatever. Like, I played like 80 hours of Skyrim already. I'm not going to go back to that game.
Can I say something about that,
sure,
though?
Yeah.
I do think it's smart.
It is very
because
smart.
Because I think with the PS4 in particular, there's a whole generation of people who missed Skyrim.
Yeah.
And like me, I never played Skyrim.
Yeah, if you haven't played it, it's a great game to pick up.
And if it came out on the PS4 and was just super easy for me to pick up that way, yeah, there's no reason not to play it. So, and it sounds like it would have the same kind of mod support they're doing on Fallout 4.
That would be very interesting.
So,
yeah.
I think it's worth doing. Anyway.
Yeah, like, I think it's worth doing. It's just like, not for me, because I played that game, but for people who haven't, obviously, yeah, that's it. And that's an awesome game to pick up. Then also, this is a huge surprise to me, that apparently Prey 2 is actually going to be a thing. That this is a game that has been in development hell for a long time. People who probably don't remember, the original Prey was an early Xbox 360 game that was like a first-person shooter where you played as some like Native American guy, and the demo, that was all I ever really played of Prey, was like you were in a bathroom and you could like flush toilets, and it was that kind of first-person shooter, and then you got, like, invaded by aliens or something, you ended up in a UFO, and it was a early 360 first-person shooter that, like, people thought was okay, but never really, like, talked about. And then eventually, I think I don't remember all the studios involved, but eventually a different studio was making a Prey 2 game that had a really awesome trailer in, like, 2011 or 12 or something. It's been a while. And that looked like it was going to be an awesome sci-fi bounty hunter game that looked like it had basically nothing to do with Prey, but just, like, looked really cool. And then that got plunged into development hell for a long time. And then now we basically know that they've always said that, like, Prey 2 is something that is going to happen. And now we know it has been handed off to a different studio that I didn't really recognize who it was. And it's probably going to be a very different game. But Prey 2 is going to be a thing that happens.
To be fair, that's fairly similar to the development trajectory of this new Doom in some
kind
ways.
Kind of, yeah.
It didn't pass off to studios, but it did go through a lot of development hell before it came out.
Yeah, so it's like, this Prey 2 is a massive question mark, because it probably will have nothing to do with, like, that old Prey demo that looked, or Prey 2 demo that looked really awesome, but, like, that doesn't mean that whatever it is now might be equally or even more awesome than that.
So flush more toilets.
Hopefully, yeah. I like first-person shooters that are not, like, open-world first-person shooters, but, like, linear first-person shooters where you can interact with weird stuff in the environment. But it's just, like, I like first-person shooters where the mirrors work. That's always fun and interesting and novel. I also like first-person shooters where you can look down and see your own feet. It's, like, all super superfluous stuff that you don't need, but I like it when it's there. And I recognize it and I appreciate the effort. So then next up with Bethesda, Dishonored 2. This was announced last year. They will talk more about Dishonored 2. That will be the thing that happens. I didn't play Dishonored 1, so I don't have really investment in that, but...
People liked it.
People really like Dishonored 1. Like, that kind of game is not for me, but if you are into that kind of game, they don't make much of them. So that's awesome. What is way more awesome and something I'm very excited about is they have basically confirmed that Machine Games is making a sequel to Wolfenstein The New Order.
Yep.
Which was an awesome first-person shooter campaign, a huge surprise last year. Or maybe that was 2 years ago now. And
It was two.
It was a surprisingly really awesome game, very unique kind of game, and I think there's a huge amount of potential for them to make a sequel to that.
I'm thinking of picking that up now, because I love Doom so much, and I know it's a different kind of game,
but
it sounds like it's of similar caliber.
It is, And while it is a different sort of paced game, it does have some similarities in terms of it. I think it takes different lessons from old-school first-person shooters, but I do think it definitely takes lessons from them. And there are some things that I feel like, while they were made by different studios, they were both made by studios owned by Bethesda, so obviously they would be sharing information. I feel like there are some things with how some of the upgrade system stuff works that it definitely borrowed from Wolfenstein The New Order, some of those ideas. Okay. So, yeah.
Because now you can get it for $20. So
yeah,
I would,
yeah. And maybe I should go back and get that DLC, the Old Blood, that was really well reviewed, but I just never picked it up. Maybe I should get that.
I'm sure it's worth it if you like the game.
Yeah. So, yeah, Wolfenstein 2, very excited to see what that is. And then also, they are making a sequel to The Evil Within, an Evil Within 2, which was that horror game that seemed like it was going to be promising at first because it had Shinji Mikami involved with the development, that he was the guy that's best known as the Resident Evil 4 guy. And Resident Evil 4 is a great game. Evil Within, I didn't really play it because the reviews were very bad. I want another game that is like Resident Evil 4 because they've never made a game like Resident Evil 4.
I will say, The Evil Within, I wouldn't say the reviews were necessarily really bad. I think there was a lot of, this game has potential, there are interesting things about it, it doesn't fully come together, and it's kind of tepid. That was kind of my, and so that's actually, that's something I feel like kind of worth making a sequel to, because maybe you can make something worthwhile.
Yeah.
Clearly talented people are working on it.
Yeah, and there's not that many survival horror games. Definitely there are very few AAA survival horror games these days.
Yeah.
So it would be awesome for there to be a really good one. I would not get my hopes up for this, but hey, anything is possible.
The Evil Within had awesome cover art.
It did, yeah. And some of the style of that game was really cool. It just seemed like it didn't really come together in the end. So that basically does it for Bethesda. As I said, I didn't put a speculation part in there because we basically know what their conference is going to be.
Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah, no, that's fucking not going to happen.
Fallout 5.
They just came out with Fallout 4. That studio does not work on a yearly schedule. The thing with this is that Bethesda is becoming a very big publisher now, and that is why. Because none of these games are made by, Bethesda GameWorks Studios.
And it's actually pretty awesome. Bethesda is a really good publisher. They have...
Yeah.
We didn't, Evil Within may have not been a great game or anything, but it's a cool experiment.
It's a game that other publishers would never even have given the chance.
You could very happily just follow Bethesda games, which is kind of what my brother does, because he really likes Bethesda, Bethesda and BioWare, and just have fun with that,
Yeah, and I think it is, notable to look at, this list of, there's a, it leans towards first-person games, but, Prey 2, if that's, it has any similarities to, Prey, or, that old Prey 2 demo, and Dishonored 2, Wolfenstein 2, and Evil Within 2, although those are all twos, those are all very different kinds of games, and I think it really does go to their credit as a publisher that they are giving these different studios their chances to make games like Dishonored or Evil Within or Wolfenstein that are these single-player focused games. Some of them are first-person single-player games that is not what is popular today. Everyone is all up in that multiplayer shit, And I really respect Bethesda's dedication to making these kinds of games. So, yeah. Next up, we've got Ubisoft, Watch Dogs 2. We've already talked about Watch Dogs 2. It will be there.
Why did they announce it early?
I don't know. Maybe just because they want to sort of get the word out there to sort of control. Because what can happen with E3 is that your big announcement can be lost in the shuffle, especially with Microsoft and Sony of their big announcements. And since Watch Dogs 2 is not a surprise, I think they're fine with saying, like, yeah, we're making Lost Dogs 2. We're going to put some information out there, and then we're going to have a big, cool gameplay thing at E3 for people really interested in the game. And I think it mostly goes to it being a sequel to Watch Dogs, yes. That they don't need it to be, like, the big thing that their presentation hinges on.
Right. So what else we got?
So then next we've got, I have this labeled as last year's cleanup, because this is all the games they premiered last year that have not come out yet. We have Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands, which was the game they ended their last year's E3 with. That seemed kind of interesting. It had a lot of people saying, cocaine, like, follow the cocaine, and, like, always calling it the cocaine in a way that I was kind of into because it felt really dumb. So maybe that game is good. Like, their Tom Clancy stuff tends to be okay, except for The Division, which I will say there will probably be DLC for The Division as well. I would not be surprised if, like, they announced their, like, a big expansion to that game, because they've only released, like, I think, little free DLC packs since its launch. We will also get what is still an amazing title to say, South Park: The Fractured Butthole, the sequel to, I think, 2014 South Park's The Stick of Truth. Like, a sequel
that was 2013.
That, like, 2013? Yeah, I guess it would have been, yeah, because it was the old console game. But yeah, like, I never really played Stick of Truth because it was an old console game.
I did.
Yeah, you liked it a lot, right?
No, I didn't finish it, no. But I got rid of it.
Did you like it at all?
If it were a $15 download game that was 3 hours long, I would have loved it. I think stretching it out to, like, a 20-hour long RPG that was, like, Paper Mario Lite in its gameplay mechanics did not do it any favors, but, like, on a technical level, even though it had some problems, Jesus, was that game impressive in, like, emulating the look and feel of South Park. So if they can do that on the next-gen consoles and have it really work the way it needs to, and maybe polish the gameplay to a point where it's worth buying a $60 game for, I would be interested in that.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm curious about it, because, like I said, I didn't play the Stick of Truth stuff, and it just, like, on the outside in, it looked very impressive, as you say, for, like, it just looked like an episode of the TV show to such an extent that, like, it was almost disturbing in a way. Like, it's a very bizarre version of the Uncanny Valley, but it sort of was that Uncanny Valley effect. But yeah, I'm very curious to see more of, like, what the sequel is, because I assume we'll get a date for that game, because it seems like it... I mean, they must just be building off of all the assets and technology they built for Stick of Truth, so I can't imagine it would be a game that needs, like, 4 or 5 years to develop. So then next we have another game they announced last year, For Honor, which was a game it looked like it was, like, a third-person action multiplayer battle arena-style game featuring medieval knights, like, feudal samurai, and I think it was, like, Vikings. There was a third faction. And the only thing I will note for that game, the one thing I mainly remember, is that it was presented by a dude that looked like Alan Moore, only even crazier. Like, he had a huge beard, a fucking, like, cane, a hat, and, like, he was dressed all in black, and he was just probably, like, 150% more intense than he needed to be to give the demo. And I really hope, even if it's not For Honor, I really hope that dude's on stage again, because that's... I need at least one guy per E3 that is way too intense and, like, way too into his own demo. Like, I need one dude to just go, like, ha-ha, during the middle of him giving this presentation. So hopefully For Honor guy is up there. Then we will also get another Just Dance game, because every year there's a new Just Dance game for Ubisoft. I don't even know what they come out on. I think they're mobile games now. They used to be, like, a Wii thing. And I'm sure we will get another 5-minute section where you have a bunch of people dancing on stage, and that's when I check Twitter.
Okay.
Then there will be a lot of mobile games. That is the stuff that I know will definitely be at Ubisoft. Speculation: Beyond Good and Evil 2. Will it ever happen?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. The people holding out for that game.
I like this game where, like, you pose a question and I just have to think about this for a second. I like this.
Okay. Will there be a new Splinter Cell?
Yes.
I hope so. I'm not 100% on yes. Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell Blacklist was a really awesome game that did not get the credit it deserved. But yeah. Then I also have... Here I wrote out a joke. I'm just going to say this joke. I don't even know why it's in this section, but it's just a joke I wrote. Tom Clancy presents Tom Clancy's Clancy 6, the Tom Clancy Cell and Clancy Recon by Tom Clancy, and for Tom Clancy's The Division of Tom Clancy's. Because, goddamn, they make a lot of Tom Clancy games nowadays. Because they have Tom Clancy's The Division, they have Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands, and then they may very well have a new Splinter Cell game, because it's been a while.
So, okay, Tom Clancy's been dead for, like, a year and a half. At what point?
I think longer than that, even.
How long? At what point does it become super gross?
I think it's already gross, because it's just so meaningless now. Like, it used to be that the Tom Clancy's brand on a video game indicated that it was like this sort of like hardcore, like semi-simulation style game. Like the old Splinter Cell games were intense. Like I can't even play them. Like I tried to get into Chaos Theory so much because it seemed awesome, but like it was so arcane in terms of like the controls and everything because it was so complicated. And like old Ghost Recon games, like Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, like those games were fucking nuts in terms of like an old Rainbow Six. Those games were super intense in how they tried to simulate that sort of like military style that was felt like it fit with the Tom Clancy sort of brand of military fiction. And now it's just like Tom Clancy's The Division is like as far away you can get from something being Tom Clancy's without it just having like fucking aliens in it, you know?
Like, well, they'll get there. Yeah. Here, okay, here's the thing. I think, you know who I think should be making a Tom Clancy game?
Yeah, okay.
Telltale. Because, let me tell you.
Tom Clancy's Telltale Adventures.
Yes, because Tom Clancy wrote the Jack Ryan novels, right?
Yes, he did.
I have all the Jack Ryan novels because my dad had them. They're in our bookshelf still. And there's a whole series of those where Jack Ryan, he's not out in the field anymore, but all of Congress gets destroyed and he's the designated survivor, so he becomes president. And right. I want the Telltale game where you are President Jack Ryan and have to make the big decisions. And that, oddly enough, would be way more faithful to the spirit of Tom Clancy than any of this other shit.
Telltale's Tom Clancy's The Hunt for Red October, the video game.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Imagine that. With like you're on the sub. This would be an early Jack Ryan thing, but you're on the sub. You're going around with like your shitty walking animation, and you have to make decisions like, you know, do we fight them now? No, we wait.
Do we wait until we fight them later? And it's the exact same choice then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I would.
I've got it. I know how to save Telltale and Tom Clancy.
Yeah, and like you know, Ubisoft and Telltale is just like, you know, two kind of decent studios that are probably maybe would be a little bit better if they go together. So yeah, Tom Clancy's. Another question, new Ubi art game, and this is, the Ubi art is like the studio that made like the Rayman stuff, Child of Light, like that sort of like the more artsy 2D style stuff. Do you think we'll see a new one?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because it's been a while.
Yeah, because I think last year's was Valiant Hearts, The Great War, which is a game I keep on intending to play.
They're all very acclaimed.
And like stylistically, they look awesome. So yeah. I think there will definitely be a new Ubi art game.
I did not finish Child of Light. I did play a couple hours of it. I didn't think like mechanically it was interesting enough for me to continue with, but absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful game, yeah. Stunning. I think it was on PS Plus or something because I also have it. Or it was either on PS Plus or it was so cheap that I was like, I'll buy it because I might play it. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to see what the new Ubi art game is, assuming it's going to be there. Assassin's Creed movie stuff. Do you think? Yes. Okay, the series of questions. Do you think they'll talk about the Assassin's Creed movie at all?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that there will be a new trailer or teaser trailer or something?
Yes.
Okay.
There will be new footage. I think it'll be a clip.
Okay. Do you think that there will be any props from the movie on stage for Aisha Tyler, who I assume is going to present it again because she's presented like every Ubisoft conference for years now? Do you think there will be any props from the movie for her to be like check this out, and like shh, and like pop it out and be like kind of funny and edgy with it?
If they're talking about the movie, absolutely yes.
Okay. This is the big one. Do you think that they will have Michael Fassbender himself come out on stage to say, the Assassin's Creed movie will come out whenever it's coming out, and look forward to this new trailer.
Okay.
And just look really awkward on stage and have no idea why he's there.
No, but he'll appear via satellite or pre-released video to introduce the new clip.
Yes, from the set of the Assassin's Creed movie, which has already basically been filmed. Yes, we will have Michael Fassbender recording a thing where he is clearly scripted and has no idea what he's doing. It feels like he doesn't belong here at all. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're not getting him there, but
yeah, you know. I don't think so either, but I think you found a good middle ground, and I think is highly plausible. Because it's like, it reminds me, think of back when Xbox had that TV studio, there was like a tiny clip when they were doing the TV stuff of like when Steven Spielberg was going to make a fucking executively produce a Halo series, where on their stage he was like, they had the video of him like, and I'm really excited to work with such a rich narrative universe as the Halo universe. And I'm really excited to work with all the talented people at Microsoft. And like that was the whole video. I think we'll get one of those.
Yes.
I think you're right. Will we get a new fully featured Grow Home style game, which was their like weird platforming game with a robot dude that I played? It was kind of fun.
Not yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they should, but I don't think they will. Do you think we will get a teaser for the new Assassin's Creed game?
No, I think it's too far off. And I think they want to be quiet about that.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that as well. And then
that would be a long time off, I feel like, if it's not coming out this fall, and maybe they're waiting for fall 2017.
Yeah, it's definitely a fall 2017 game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then my last...
Unless they've been punking us, and really what they're doing is a February Assassin's
Creed. That would be so funny if it just came out, like, January 1st.
Yes.
That would just be, like, the biggest fuck you.
Okay, I'm not going to rule that out. I just want to... I want to make that known. It's a remote possibility, but I do think it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's, you know, Ubisoft, they can get you. They're those fucking French Canadians. They know. They have a really twisted sense of humor. But yeah, okay, so then my last thing... This is not a yes or no question. This is a... What brand new game do you think they're going to tease at the end of the conference only for it to be delayed a whole bunch and then ultimately squeak out years later to minimal fanfare?
Okay. Gotta be something open world.
Yes, obviously. They don't make anything that's not these days.
That there's lots of room for collectibles. But yes. They've done Assassin's Creed, which is kind of its own thing.
Yes.
They've done Watch Dogs, which is a GTA clone.
Mm-hmm.
What other... It's gotta be something that's like... an old-timey, like a Middle-earth kind of clone or Witcher style where you would have a sword. Yeah, I think it would be some kind of Rome, like a swords and sandals Greek mythology thing.
Yeah, but it's like a brand new IP, like,
yes.
Or Tom Clancy's The Roman Gladiator. You know, just like stretch out that license as far as you can take it. I think that's a decent pick. I think maybe it's going to be they're going to push something into far future because they've got past stuff covered with Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
They've got their present stuff covered with their comprehensive line of Tom Clancy's games.
Just like how any game not...
set with between 1950 and like 2 years from like whenever it is, like is in the present when the game is made. Like that is just they slap the Tom Clancy's label on it.
In retrospect, are you surprised Watch Dogs is not Tom Clancy's Watch Dogs?
Actually, yeah, I am. Like, it would make as much sense as Tom Clancy's The Division for it to be Tom Clancy's Watch_Dogs. Yeah, but yeah. So, but then they have Watch Dogs covers the near future stuff. But we've seen with Call of Duty Infinite Warfare that, like, far-flung future is becoming more the thing. I think we're going to get, like, a spacey kind of third-person open-world game. That's my bet. That okay. will then be probably terrible when it actually comes out.
You're probably right, and it sounds like that's the kind of thing that could get the hype that Watch Dogs
yes,
got.
Yes, because I think space is really big right now. Then just the same way that near future stuff was really big in 2012 when they first teased Watch Dogs.
So it's like, I would think it's like their attempt to do No Man's Sky.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. That is it. Like a more third-person action-y version of No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
That is what they're going to tease, and it is in no way going to be like that when it actually comes
no.
out. Yeah. Okay. So that wraps it up for Ubisoft.
That's Ubisoft. I feel like Ubisoft is a really easy one to guess.
Yeah. So the next, this is like its own thing. It's just a small one, but I feel like this publisher is big enough to just sort of talk about it. Activision. Call of Duty Infinite Warfare will be there. But what is interesting, I guess this is a question. Do you think Call of Duty Infinite Warfare will be on the Sony stage, or do you think it will be on the Microsoft stage?
Sony. Haven't they already made the Switch?
I mean, they did. Black Ops 3 was on the Sony stage last year. Yes.
Yeah, I think once you go Sony these days, you don't go back.
Yeah, I agree. And then do you think, then as a follow-up, do you think that Sony will once again lock up the DLC exclusivity for like a year?
Yes.
Yes, I think so as well, because they did last year, and it had been Microsoft since like Modern Warfare 2 or something. But yeah, I think that Switch...
Honestly, at some point, I do... This is a question when we get to your Sony piece I want to ask. It's not that the Xbox One is doing horribly, but PlayStation has a lead that is more commanding than we've ever seen in this kind of split. At what point do these games just go PlayStation exclusive and forget about the thing that's harder to develop for? I really do wonder if we're going to start getting more big stuff that's just, fuck it, we don't care about the Xbox.
Maybe. I don't think we've quite gone to that point, but I think it's possible. I think there will be some more third-party exclusive stuff going towards Sony than like typically has in the past.
I just think we're pushing more and more in that direction.
Yeah,
so
I agree. So then, the other Activision thing, the Destiny DLC, Rise of Iron, like that will definitely be there.
Yeah.
Like, do you think it's going to have any spot in the Sony press conference? Because it's definitely not going to be at Microsoft.
Yes, I think it will, because they've already confirmed it'll have PlayStation exclusive stuff. They haven't said what that is. That usually there'll be 5 minutes at the Sony presser where they're going
to
talk about.
Well,
that.
Do you think that it's going to be like a trailer, or do you think that it will just be? Because I think there will definitely be like a Call of Duty Infinite Warfare like gameplay big thing that happens on the Sony stage. do you think that the Destiny DLC stuff is just them, like the Activision executive saying? And then also, we are live. They have the DLC for both Call of Duty Infinite Warfare and the new Destiny stuff will be exclusive for on Sony platforms for 18 months or whatever.
Yeah, it'll be more like that.
Yeah, because
they might have a little trailer with like whatever. Maybe there's an extra strike for.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe they tease like the new raid more extensively. Yeah, but I don't think that Destiny's going to have a big presence this.
No, because Destiny, I'm not saying it's played out, but it's a 2-year-old game at this point.
Yeah, we've gotten Destiny big on the Sony stage. Like for the past 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, I don't think it's as big as. I mean, it's sold the copies it's going to sell. This is for continued, you know, keeping the people happy.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, my last point for Activision. Do you think that Blizzard will show up in any capacity at E3?
Hmm. I mean, they've got World of Warcraft Legion, but they don't really need E3 to pitch that.
Yeah, like because they do have BlizzCon, which is their own conference.
Yes, Overwatch. It's already a huge success, and I don't think they're going to have anything new ready in time for that.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But, like, there was...
Maybe someone will remind us about Warcraft, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, like, it does feel like there have been a couple of times where Blizzard has kind of come out with, like, Diablo 3 on consoles and stuff like that, but they typically stay away from E3.
Yeah, and what else do they have that could even go on consoles at this point? Because they're not going to port WoW at this point.
They, like the only thing it would be a new game. Like, yeah. But I don't think, like, Blizzard is a studio that takes its time. I don't think that's going to happen. And then, like, also thinking of that, like, this is something I forgot to put on my outline. Do you think that Rockstar will be at E3 at all?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I read Red Dead 2. I really do think this is there have been so many leaks about that. Either that or a remastered Red Dead Redemption. I think we're going to see one of those two things.
I think we are going to see both of those things, but I don't think we're going to see them at E3 because Rockstar does their own shit, and I feel like they typically announce their stuff on their own online, and we'll see Red Dead Revolution, whatever the fuck they want to call it, Red Dead Reloaded on that. But I do think it's Red Dead 3, because Red Dead Revolver is technically Red Dead 1, so this would be Red
Dead
3. I do think we'll see that and a Red Dead Redemption remastered for new consoles. I do not think they'll be at E3. But it's possible. Okay. It would be a big get for Microsoft or Sony to have them come out on their stage and say,
yes.
Like, I don't think that Rockstar would ever go exclusive for one of them, because they have absolutely no reason to, but, you know, there is a posturing element to E3 about getting a developer like Rockstar on your stage. It just very rarely happens. Okay, so that is it for all the third-party stuff. Now we dig in. Microsoft, first up, do you think we... Because this is... Okay, but so we know for sure that Microsoft is making an Xbox One Slim version, like they're redesigning the original Xbox One, and we know that they're making an Xbox One 2, like that's codenamed Xbox, like Scorpio or whatever it is. So Xbox One Slim, do you think that they will like talk about that at E3 on their press conference?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big deal. Sure. One of the weird details I've heard about that is that it's going to have a redesigned controller. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I think that like has been sort of taken to be more significant than it is. I think like redesigned controller is like the bumpers feel a little bit better or like the analog sticks are tightened up. I don't think it's going to be like it. They're not going to throw a new button on it.
Because that's like one of the most praised things about the Xbox One. It's not a perfect controller, but it's very good.
I think like it is a redesigned controller, but it's still basically the same controller.
I will say my brother has the Xbox One Elite controller, and I've gotten to use it a little bit. It's awesome, and there are things on that they could very easily take into a new one, like just fixing the bumpers and things like that, just little enhancements that you don't need to have a $150 controller for, but you could bring back to the main controller. So I would say that.
Yeah, but then this is something I don't think, but do you think we'll see any... Do you think they'll talk about the Xbox One 2 project thing?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Me either. Like, because that's like, one, since Sony has now said they're not, I don't think Microsoft will. And then also, we know that Microsoft's project in that regard is further off than Sony's.
I don't think they were going to anyway.
Yeah.
The Slim is for this year. They frankly, I think they're mad people know about it.
Yeah.
They want the Slim to be selling because that's what their project is this year.
Yeah, they don't want to shoot themselves in the foot by announcing like they're beefed up.
Question.
Yeah.
You do not have an Xbox One, so you don't get to do the hilarious physical comedy of having an Xbox One next to your PS4.
Right.
And the Xbox One being like 3 times as big.
Yes, yeah.
Will the Xbox One Slim still be bigger than the PS4?
I think they'll probably be about the same size. But it's possible.
It's so big.
It is,
you don't know until you have it. It's like the PS4 is like half the size of that thing. It's hilarious.
And yeah, I do think the Xbox One Slim will test the limits of that word slim.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be very slim. But yeah. So there's that stuff. Then this is just a roundup of the games that we know are definitely going to be there. ReCore, that is the...
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, the game that they sort of announced with a teaser kind of trailer last year. I'm expecting there will be a bigger, like, sort of, like, gameplay demo this time. Yeah. We'll find out a lot more about it. I'm really excited to see what that is. Next up, Scalebound. That is a platinum game with, like, a dude with headphones who fights dragons or something.
Okay.
That will probably be there in a gameplay. I think that one might not actually be on their stage. Like, I feel like that has, yeah, like, sort of, like, faded out in a weird way. Because it had a sort of presence at Gamescom. And then, like, I feel like people haven't really talked about it much since then. But Scalebound might be there. It's a game that, it's a first-party exclusive that has been announced. So then there will be a Forza game. I just said Forza because I didn't want to expend the energy to find out what Forza we're on anymore, because I fucking can't remember anymore.
No one can.
I think we're on 6. We might be on 7. I don't know. There will be a Forza game there.
I think we're on 6.
Yeah. If with last year, I remember for sure that they had a, when they announced whatever Forza it was for that one. Because they also have, they have Forza Motorsport, which are their more simulation racer games. Then they also spun off Forza Horizon, which is a more arcadey game. And they're on, like, Forza Horizon 3 maybe now, so it's going to be one of those two. I cannot keep track because I don't play any of these games. But last year, they lowered down a car from the ceiling. Do you think that they will lower down a car from the ceiling this time for the new Forza game?
They're going to drive it through the audience.
Like, through, like, the aisles, or, like, through the audience?
I think a lot of people are going to die at this year's Microsoft.
They line up all the people that they feel like think are, like, well, this is someone who, like, works for official PlayStation Magazine or something, like, those kind of people. They just, like, line up that and just, like, go right through it, like, fuck you! Xbox for life! Yeah, I don't think they're going to go with a car thing again, like, from the ceiling. I think they're going to take a car-heavy year off, and we'll get a car-heavy year next year. But it's always a car year. I don't know why, but it always is. The next, Gears of War 4. Do you think they will show a good demo for Gears of War 4 this time? Or do you think we'll get another bad demo for Gears of War 4?
I think they're going to show the best demo they possibly can, and that will be us knowing whether or not that game will be good.
Yeah, I don't have super high hopes for Gears of War 4. It's just in terms of, like, all the stuff I've seen of, like, how they're taking, like, the story and everything just seems really dull. That demo that was not good.
No, I hope it will be good. I would love another good Gears of War, but I don't know.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll definitely be there. I think we'll definitely get a date on it. I think it maybe comes out this year. It'll come out in, like, spring 2017. But, yeah, Gears of War 4 will definitely be there. Halo Wars 2, we already know. We talked about it a bit. It will be there. As we said, this is what it's probably going to be a, like, and you can play the demo beta for Halo Wars 2 right now. Cha-ching! And then, like, they, like, maybe, like, fireworks go off. Who knows? Halo Wars 2 will be there. We talked about that. Crackdown 3. That will also probably be there. I think that will also be we get a lot more gameplay and maybe a date for that, which I'm kind of excited for. I really love Crackdown 1. The Crackdown 2 sucked. Maybe Crackdown 3 will be good. It's hard to tell. Then there's the Rare game, Sea of Thieves, that they also sort of teased last year.
That looks cool.
Yeah, that looks cool. Like, I think hopefully that will be on stage and we'll get to learn a lot more about it because it's been sort of like vague. Then there will be a bunch of indie stuff on the stage.
Cuphead is the big one.
Cuphead, yeah.
God, that looks good. They released a little video of now it's got more platforming elements. Oh, as a animation scholar, I cannot fucking wait for that
game. Yeah, that game looks really awesome. I think that Below game made by Cappy Games, which has been in development since the announcement of Xbox One, maybe that will finally come out. Who knows? I feel like that game has, they've been talking about that at E3 for a long time now. Yeah. There'll probably be other indie stuff. I don't think we need to speculate about that. Dead Rising 4, that will be there. They are probably pretty annoyed that that got out because they think that's going to be their big first-party exclusive announcement this year, because I think a lot of this year for Microsoft is, and the same thing with Sony, is them sort of like pushing forward all the games they teased last year at last year's E3 to like a more like confident position of when they're like going to announce dates and everything for those and show more substantial stuff, because it was a lot of teasers from both Microsoft and Sony last year. So yeah, Dead Rising 4 will be there, and I'm curious to see like at what point in its development is going to be, how early on it is, because there's a chance sometimes these exclusive games, they announce them and get them out really quick. Sometimes they announce them really early to try to like position themselves stronger if they feel like there's a hole in their exclusive lineup to like put it out there before it's ready to actually be seen. But we'll see how that is. Then this is the thing I'm most interested about at the Microsoft press conference, is how much are they going to talk about the Windows 10 integration stuff between Xbox and Windows 10 that they have been pushing quietly since last year's E3, like on the side. I feel like Phil Spencer has been talking about that a lot, about like there is like a weird thing where Halo 5 Forge mode is getting like a Windows 10
oh, right.
version. Like there's going to be a Windows 10 version of like Forza something. Like Microsoft is pushing really hard for Windows 10 to be a video game platform, with like how Quantum Break came out on Windows 10 and nobody liked it on Windows 10 because it was a fucked up version of that game. And Microsoft has a very sordid history with like games for Windows Live of trying to get involved with PC gaming. How much do you think we're going to see of that this year, Jonathan?
I think we will see a fairly significant... I don't know. It does make sense why Phil Spencer and company want to do that.
Yeah.
Because if Xbox is kind of failing... Not failing, but it's in a rut.
Yeah.
And... But it's in a rut, but your list... There's a lot of good games on that list.
Yes, definitely.
They have a great... And this is why I own an Xbox One, even though I think it is an imperfect console. I do enjoy gaming on my Xbox One frequently, because there is a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Even if Halo 5 was a pretty big disappointment in some ways, they've made up for it with a lot of other good exclusives. There's a lot of... They're giving opportunities to a lot of cool developers on that list. Frankly, if they weren't trying to get all that stuff out day and date with Windows 10, I think they're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
At this point, I just... That's how you get bigger, is try to diversify this and use, especially with Microsoft is being such dicks about making sure everyone gets Windows 10,
yeah.
like your story.
They're just forcing it on people.
Yeah, but it's a way to make Windows 10 more viable, to get around the monopoly of Steam,
yeah.
which everyone is trying. You know, if you've got Microsoft attacking from one side and GOG attacking on the other side with their new platform, it feels like Steam might finally lose a little market share.
Maybe.
I don't know. But anyway, so, yeah, I think there's got to be more. I mean, does Gears of War 4 come out on Windows 10? Because they
I think it should. I don't know. I'm not confident that it will. I think it might be a little bit too late for how they're,
yeah.
for, like, when they start pushing this Windows 10 stuff. But I think the Windows 10 thing is going to be big for them in terms of, I think they're going to be pushing basically all their first-party games from now on to be on Xbox One and on the Windows 10 game store for PCs. And I do think it's going to be a very big part of their like announcement lineup. I think that's going to be yeah. how they like position themselves, like
yes.
At like the front, like, hey, this is like what we're doing. We're expanding our Xbox One options for customers by making this slimmer, like better version of the machine, and then we are also expanding the Xbox brand to PC. I think that's how they position it.
Yeah.
So do you think there will be a HoloLens demo like there was last year with that weird Minecraft thing?
Yes, because everyone's talking about VR.
Yeah.
Even though most of the people watching this will not get VR for years to come.
Yeah, I think it will probably be there as well. Do you think that there will be any big new exclusive, new IP kind of thing that we just can't even think of right here? We can't anticipate?
Yes.
I think there will be one. I agree. I think there will be
something.
Big new exclusive. Do you think that Microsoft will have any big third-party stuff on their stage at all? That's not necessarily exclusives. Like, do you think Titanfall 2 will be there? That kind of stuff.
If Titanfall 2 shows at Microsoft or Sony, I would put money on Microsoft.
Yeah.
Of the two. Just because it does have that pre-existing relationship.
It does.
It would be a dick move of EA to do that at Sony.
Yeah, even and if EA, I feel like, has traditionally sort of been still on Microsoft's side more than Sony's.
I think they will get the money out for someone, but I also... Rise of the Tomb Raider got fucked by that deal.
Yeah.
I don't think you can forget that, because that was a big AAA game, a very, very good game, a polished, excellent
I'm really
game.
Excited to play it when it comes out on PS4.
And it just face-palmed on the Xbox One, or face-planted on the Xbox One, and I think that the rest of the industry has to look at that and be wary.
Yeah.
You have to.
And I think like the way that Microsoft's market share in the console market is dwindling makes them far less attractive. Even if they do have more money than Sony does to throw around for this kind of stuff, like I think there is like a big consideration for those game studios about like how much money are you giving us, because like this game might not sell that well if we're only coming out on Xbox One compared to the opportunity cost that coming out on both consoles.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe Titanfall 2 will be there, but I do think this will be the year that there is not a lot of big third-party stuff, because most of it did transition last year to Sony's. Okay, yeah, so do you think there will be any Japanese developers on the Microsoft stage at all?
No,
I don't think so either. It occurred to me, so I put it in there. Do you think we'll see them talk about any sort of like console features like the OS, anything like that?
I don't know what they're doing with the OS at this point.
Me neither.
Man, it... It's technically better, but it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, it's pretty sluggish overall, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there, because there has been some talk about them integrating some Cortana stuff into the Xbox One OS.
That could be cool. I think they could talk about the backwards compatibility a little more.
Sure.
That's been a big success. That is a really cool part of that console.
Yeah,
it's one
of
my favorite things about it now. I mean, we were talking about XCOM earlier. They released that on Games with Gold, and you can just play it on your Xbox One. That Games with Gold has become a better value for games than PS Plus because of backwards compatibility.
Yeah, yeah, because you can't play PS3 games on the PS4.
Nope, and because every month they get a cool 360 game, they put it on backwards compatibility, and they give it to you for free. That's a really cool deal, and I'm really enjoying that. And if anything, maybe they can come up with some new stuff to make it even better. I would not be surprised by that.
I think they're at least going to mention it. I think they're going to say, like, we've had this many Xbox 360 games, like, backwards compatible now on the Xbox One, and where have we lined up this, like, these marquee titles also to come out and all that stuff. I think that will happen. Do you think Oculus Rift will show up at all, keeping in mind that they did make a partnership with Oculus Rift so that, like, there's Xbox One controllers ship with the Oculus Rift?
If Windows 10 is a major part of the show, yes.
Yeah, I think it is possible. I think that, like, Oculus Rift, assuming that Oculus Rift does well enough, I think they'll definitely be a part of the Microsoft presser next year. I think they might be here this year as well. Finally, do you think that there will be any multimedia stuff, like any TV, movie, music stuff coming out about, like, we've locked up this deal?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I feel like Microsoft has tried to position themselves so far away from that.
I feel like their last two pressers have all been games.
Yeah, I think so as well. So I think they keep on that track because they took a pretty hard hit because that was most of what their console reveal was about. And then the last question I have, do you think we'll see anything of Halo 6 here?
No.
Too early, you think?
Too early, and I think I don't know. They've either got to put more work into Halo 5 or let people forget it.
Yeah. I think they're going to tease Halo 6. I think they're going to tease it, because I feel like 343 pushes those games faster, like out faster than Bungie did. So I think they're going to at least tease it.
They did technically take 3 years with Halo 5.
They did, but it kind of got soft delayed because it came out 1 year later than like they originally indicated it was going to come out when they announced the console.
Right.
But yeah, like I think we get a teaser for it.
Okay.
I feel like Microsoft just doesn't. I don't think Halo Wars 2 is enough for them. I feel like they need their Halo. They desperately need it.
Okay, here's the question then.
Yeah.
Do we get a Halo spinoff this year or next year? Or something like that.
I mean, I think Halo Wars 2 already fills that void. Maybe we get a new Halo TV show. Who knows? They seem desperate to make that idea.
Or we're not getting Halo 5 ODST, is what you're saying.
No, I don't think we're getting. I don't think we're getting any like big, substantial like DLC kind of thing or like expansion to Halo 5 that would be like an ODST version. But no. So that wraps it up for Microsoft. Moving on to Sony. We already know that the PlayStation 4 Neo thing will not be there, so we don't need to talk about that. How much do you think that PSVR will be there, featured on the stage?
Heavily.
I think so heavily as well. Is it coming out this year?
It is. I do. There were those reports that part of why they were making it is because the PS4.5 is that it wasn't running well on the initial PlayStation 4.
Exactly. I feel like those were more rumors than because once the bigger stuff came out and we learned that it was like the Neo and everything, none of that stuff talked about that because it wasn't in the stuff they gave to developers. So.
Yeah, I know. I'm interested. And I'm very curious to see what the tone of console-based VR feels like. Does it come across like the year we got the Move and the Kinect?
Yeah.
Or does it feel like something actually worthwhile? That's going to be the question for me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more on the worthwhile side of things. Because VR, while it is still very nascent, it is here. And it's like I have not used it personally, but all the talk about it is that the technology is there. It's just the games aren't yet because nobody wants to take the risk to, like, put big money into games. Because, like, EA, like, Ubisoft, I think, is, like, working on a small project. But, like, other than that, EA, Activision, like, Bethesda, all the big publishers are not making VR games yet. I think Sony is going to push their PSVR stuff really hard.
Yes.
I think they are in a unique position as Sony to really, like, get some of their studios to make some virtual reality games that don't look like shitty, like, 3D game demos from, like, the late 90s, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think PSVR will definitely be there pretty heavy. The Last Guardian, I think, will be there. I think we'll get, like,
I'm excited for that one.
The proper date maybe we'll get like a demo, but we'll definitely get the actual date for that game.
Or we get another 9 years of never hearing about
it. Yeah, maybe, or this is do or die. This is the E3 where either, like, yes, you get the actual date for Last Guardian. It is playable for press, like, on the stage floor, like, and everyone sees it and it's like, yeah, Last Guardian is actually coming out. Or this just doesn't even show up. They never even talk about it, and it's like it never existed, and it just fades into history. I think it's going to be the earlier one of those, but the latter is still technically a possibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then Horizon Zero Dawn, we sort of talked about that a little bit earlier. That will definitely be there.
Okay.
I'm just excited to see that. Gravity Rush 2, or Gravity Days 2. I'm so excited for that. Do you think it'll be on the stage? Because it was premiered at TGS. So it's definitely more of a Japanese thing, but there's definitely going to be an English version of the game. Do you think that they did
the big remaster release this year, why not?
I think it will be on the stage. Like, I really hope it is, because, you know, like...
That first game is so good. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I really need to get around to playing that remastered version.
It's so good.
Yeah. Then also we have the next game from David Cage, the, you know, Beyond Two Souls, Heavy Rain, that guy. Because the last year at E3, they sort of premiered Detroit Become Human, which is his next game, which is the most fucking David Cage video game name, or like subtitle, Become Human. I think we're going to see a lot more of that game, because Sony likes that guy a lot for some reason, even if his games are not all there all the time. I don't know. Yeah, that'll definitely be up there. So now the speculation stuff. Big new exclusives. So there will definitely be new IP and everything. Like, I think there's... Or maybe not new IP, but there will definitely be new games. I sort of, like, jotted up some stuff here. Do you think we'll see a new God of War thing? Whether it's, like, God of War 4, whether or not it's, like, God of War with Egyptian mythology or something. Do you think a God of War-style game will be on stage from that studio?
Absolutely, because they did that 3 remastered.
They did, yes.
They just got Uncharted 4 out. It's time for another Sony classic to come out of the closet and be on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, I would be excited for a God of War 4. I just really hope that it is not Kratos. I think there's a huge amount of potential for that franchise to go to other cultures and other mythologies and explore that area. And if they do that, I'll be very excited. If we see Kratos on that stage, I will be super bumped out, because while I really like God of War 1 through 3, I think that franchise ran itself into the ground in terms of the story by the time it got to the end. So hopefully no more Kratos. Do you think we'll see a new Ready at Dawn game? They are the studio that made The Order 1866. Do you think we'll see The Order 1867, or was it 1886?
It was 1886.
1886. Do you think we'll see The Order 1887 or a completely new game from them?
They are never going to mention The Order 1886 again.
Probably not, no.
Buried under a landfill somewhere like E.T.
Yeah.
That studio might be there. Yeah. Or they might have just been fired or something. I'm kidding.
Yeah, The Order 1886 does not seem like a very good game. I think it was that bad. Do you think... This is what I think will be there. Do you think we'll see the news, whatever the new Sucker Punch game is? They are the people who make the infamous games. So we have not seen anything from them since Second Son and First Light.
I think that would be this would be a good time to do that, because, God, Second Son was a good game.
Yeah, definitely.
The best of those early launch window titles for the PS4. And I hope we see what's... Do you think it'll be another Infamous, or do you think they do something
different? There were rumors, and I don't fully believe these, but they're very exciting. There were rumors a couple of months ago that Sucker Punch was making a Spider-Man game. And if that would be the greatest thing ever. Perfect combination of studio and character.
That would be like Rocksteady having Batman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's very plausible, because... As far as I understand, the Spider-Man license is still, for video games, is still owned by Activision, because they've had it for years and years and years. Unless that quietly shifted and I didn't know, like, I don't think that's going to happen, but that would be fucking amazing if that happened.
Sony's got a lot of pull right now.
Yeah, like, I'm carrying that torch in my heart.
Well, wait, Sony owns Spider-Man, Sean.
I mean, they own the movie rights, but they don't necessarily, like, they made deals with Activision.
Okay.
For, like, video game stuff, like, that stuff's all fucking complicated.
I think it could get worked out.
Yeah, if any studio would make an exclusive Spider-Man game, it would be Sony, for sure. So, yes, like, I think it's possible that that's what it will be. I think Sucker Punch will definitely be there, because it's been a couple of years now.
It's been a long time, yeah. It's time to do it.
Yeah, do you think there will be any big new IP thing that's, like, outside of these studios?
I'm going to say no. And I don't know why, but I'm just feeling like they've got enough other stuff, they don't need to do that.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I sort of more lean on the no. I think, like, the closer it will be is if, like, whatever the next, like, God of War-esque game is, maybe might technically be a different IP. I don't think they would. I think they would probably want to keep that sort of leverage from that studio, but I think that would be the biggest possibility. There's a couple of other slightly more far-fetched ones, but this is a rumor I heard. I just find it so unbelievable. Do you think we will see Knack 2?
No.
There was a rumor that someone was like, I heard on the street, yo, Knack 2, they're making Knack 2.
Knack is in the same landfill as Order 1886 and whatever that other shooter, what was the one that came out with the...
Killzone Shadowfall?
Yeah, that's
that wasn't that bad. That game was okay. It was better than those other games.
I'm not even talking about quality here. I'm talking about impact.
Sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a launch game.
That's the perfect Dark Zero of the PlayStation 4.
But it's better than... As someone who has played both Perfect Dark Zero and Killzone Shadowfall, I feel like I could definitively say Killzone Shadowfall, while it's not an amazing game, it's a lot better than
Perfect Dark Zero. I understand it's better. They've both become punchlines.
Sure, yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so Knack 2, I don't think it's going to be there, but someone said that, and I was like, well...
I'd laugh. It'd be
I
funny.
Think it would be amazing, but yeah, no. Bloodborne 2, I don't think it's going to be
not
there yet.
Not really.
I think they're going to make it, because as far as I understand, that game sold way higher than their expectations for it, and so...
I'm sure it gets made, but that also, if they announce it, that almost feels like a TGS announcement.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. So then, moving on from that, Final Fantasy 15, do you think it shows up on the stage?
Yes. Here? It shows up at either Microsoft or Sony. I guess
it's
going to
be on Sony. It's going to show up on a press conference. It's definitely going to be Sony. This is the one I'm really holding deep in my heart. Do you think we will see an English trailer for Persona 5 on the Sony press conference? The first English language trailer?
Yes.
I think so, too.
I do. I it's a big deal. I think people are almost underestimating.
And it's a Sony exclusive, also.
It is. And it's a big exclusive. Again, I don't think you earmark the month of February the way they have. They're right plop in the middle. It is still the number one game on Amazon. Pre-orders, yeah. New games, whatever. All this stuff, like, if they hadn't before, I think the reaction to that announcement the other day, they got to do it.
Yeah, I really think, because also Atlas USA has been talking sort of like on the sly about their localization stuff, and like they're sort of teasing, like, I think it's been a big effort for them to localize the game, because it sounds like, from what they've been suggesting, that they've adjusted all the like sort of comic book sound effect stuff from being katakana Japanese into English, which makes a lot of sense because it's all over the visuals of that game. That seems like a lot of work, and it also makes it seem like an English trailer for that game that I think would really stand out as something that would be like, we get the English voices, we get some of that like stuff of their work in the graphical effects of the game and everything, and the UI seems so flashy that localizing those elements and translating that into English seems like that's a lot of work. I really think that this is the time. Persona has never been on an E3 stage before. I think this is it. I think it's this time. I think and it's going to be on Sony, because it's definitely not going to be on Microsoft. But
well, it can't be, because it's not on.
It would be really funny if Microsoft put it on there on accident. But yes, Persona 5. I think it's the English language trailer is going to be there. I think at the very least that trailer will come out at E3. I just think it's going to be premiered on the Sony stage.
Yes.
Then do you think we'll see No Man's Sky at all in any capacity on the stage?
Yeah, because it... yes, because it's such a big part of their summer plans.
Yeah. Yeah,
and now, especially that it's been delayed a little further outside the E3 window, you'd be stupid not to. I know they've shown it many times, but you've got to do at least one final trailer, because that could be a huge hit.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's a quick trailer. I think this is the one year where they give Sean from Hello Games, the dude who's like always on the stage from like demoing this game, I think this is the year they give him off and is like, dude, just make the game. You clearly, like, you're an awesome guy who's obviously like has like is nervous about presenting on a stage like that. Like, just, you don't need to do it this time, because it feels like each time he's come out, it's just like he seemed more and more exhausted from having to being developing the game and being so intense about it, and then also just exasperated by like, fucking, I need to keep on doing these goddamn demos. It's like, just let me make my game. I think we'll see a trailer. I just hope they give that guy a break.
What? I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Or are you done?
No, there's some more stuff.
Okay, you keep going then. Okay. You might have it.
Yeah. Any big indie exclusives at all, do you think?
Yes, but I don't know what.
Yeah, the idea I jotted down, because The Witness is finally out. Do you think Jonathan Blow, like everyone's big indie darling now that The Witness is done, do you think he pops up? Because he was on Sony's E3 stage a couple of years ago to talk about The Witness.
There's no way he's got something ready to show.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Like, although I feel like in every interview he's given post The Witness, he's talked about that he really wants the studio to work a lot faster and not get stuck making a game for like 5 fucking years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's not time yet, but I think, you know, that
perfectionists tend to say that.
Yeah, yeah. So then, Do you think that Ubisoft will show anything? Because I feel like a lot of times they show stuff at Sony press conferences.
Yeah, they're going to show something because they've always had that exclusivity deal.
Yeah.
But I don't know how big it will be. They've got so much other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, because the one thing I can think of that it would be is it would probably be Watch Dogs 2, but I don't... I feel like because it's already been announced ahead of the conference, like Ubisoft's conference goes before Sony's, so like they'll obviously show a lot of Watch Dogs 2 stuff there. I just feel like they would be a little bit exhausting, but that's never stopped them before from showing like five fucking demos of like Assassin's Creed. So yeah, I think Ubisoft will show something. I'm just not sure. It might be that Ghost Recon game, but it'll probably be Watch Dogs 2. Then we already talked about Activision stuff. We don't need to go over that. Okay, this is one. Do you think that, because kind of like tease this, do you think that Sony will be a big dick and EA will actually like end up just saying like, fuck it, yeah, we'll put Titanfall 2 on the Sony stage. Do you think Sony will make a big play and get like Titanfall 2 DLC exclusivity and like just fucking like dunk it on Microsoft?
I think it's a remote possibility, but I think it's a real possibility.
Yeah, like I'm not fully convinced that would happen, but I think it would be a Sony-like move of Sony of recent years to just be like, fuck it, bitch, and just dunk all over Microsoft on that one.
Yeah, I don't think it's probable, but it's absolutely possible. If you don't think that's a possible thing that Sony would do today, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, I think it might be there. Then Capcom, do you think Capcom will show up at all? Like, this was like mostly me thinking, will there be a new Resident Evil game at E3 this year?
I don't know, because they're doing this thing where they're re-releasing Resident Evil, the recent 3D ones, in reverse order. So they did 6, then that the 5 is coming out in a few weeks, and then they're doing 4 all on the PS4.
But they're going like sandwiching it, because then they also did a remake of the remake of, yes, Resident Evil 1, and they re-released Resident Evil 0, and then they're working on, or I think, or maybe they talked about working on, and are maybe working on a remake of Resident Evil 2. So it seems like they are doing,
yes,
like all this remake
and with
stuff.
All of that, it seems like it's, why would you be doing it if not promotion for Resident Evil 7 or whatever we're going to get?
Yeah.
And yeah, I would. It seems like it's a Sony exclusive at this point. So.
Yeah, because Capcom makes Street Fighter, and Street Fighter 5 was a, yes, Sony exclusive as well. So that would be possible. Or even if it's multi-platform, I think it would be show up on the Sony stage,
yes,
if nothing else. Then, do you think, and this might not even just be a Sony thing, but do you think CD Projekt Red, the Witcher developers, do you think they will show up with Cyberpunk 2077, their game that is like was teased a while ago? Do you think that shows up in any capacity?
No, because I think they're all collapsed from finishing Blood and Wine.
I agree. That game is technically in development. We haven't seen much of it, so it'll show up sometime. I think it'll be next year.
Yes.
Then multimedia stuff, do you think Sony will talk about it at all? This is also, I have a parenthetical here, they are making Power Season 2. Does anybody watch that?
No, and God, I hope they don't talk about any of this shit, because that's God, they're not good at it.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that this will be the year where Sony refrains from that stuff. I get Sony has it a little bit harder in that regard for Microsoft, because they are a multimedia company. So like the games branch, I think, does not want anything to do with like getting that stuff on their stage. But I think like other arms of Sony Entertainment want to get their stuff out there,
yes,
that they're working on. So like I think maybe this is the year where like the PS4 is doing so well. I think that like the Sony game stuff probably has enough clout to be like, hey, don't shove all this shit onto our E3 stage. Let's let this E3 press conference be like 2 hours long instead of like 2.5 to 3 hours long. Because holy shit, the Sony press conference is always super long, and it's mostly like this multimedia stuff pads it out. So yeah, I think it might be there. I really hope it's not. Do you think we'll see anything from Shenmue 3 or the Final Fantasy Remake, which was their big stuff last year?
They've got to do something. I don't know. It would be very weird if they didn't follow up on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's. I don't know what you would even show. I do think you could put together a Shenmue 3 trailer. They've got to put together something for that.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is like, with both of those, it's a weird scenario, because while they did show up on the Sony stage and like Sony is supporting those games, like they're not Sony made. You know, like Shenmue's Sega, Final Fantasy VII, Square Enix, obviously. Like, and I don't think the Final Fantasy VII Remake will even be like Sony exclusive. I don't think Shenmue 3 is going to pop up on Xbox.
They've said first on PS4, so.
Yeah. But yeah, like I think there's a chance that it doesn't show up here because of like those games are clearly like long, like still in development, like are not ready fully to be shown. I think there's a chance we'll see like a Shenmue 3 trailer or something.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think we'll see Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah, I'm less.
I think that's more
about
like
that.
A TGS will be like another big trailer.
I agree with that. I do think we see something from Shenmue, just because that's now a classic E3 moment.
Yeah, that was fucking
Chase the Dragon.
Insane. last year when they did that. Because I don't even have on this list, will they have something else like that? Because I feel like there's no way, like if we had done this same format last year, we would never have gotten even close to anticipating fucking Shenmue 3 showing up at Sony. That was crazy. So do you think that they're, like with the Xbox One, do you think there will be any new console features, console OS stuff? Will they talk about that here?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Sony is not like as big on like renovating their OSs fully.
Because they get it right the first fucking time.
That's definitely true. Then this is the big Sony question. Do you think that they will say the word Vita at any point during this press conference?
No.
I am half and half on this. I think it's either this year or next year is the first time that they just simply never even say the word Vita. Like, I don't... There's definitely not going to be a big exclusive Vita game or something shown there. I think there is a decent chance that they will say it at some point in some context.
I'm going all in, no.
Okay, no. Okay, then I will go all in yes on that. We will see. The next podcast will have to come back on this. The great...
Here's one thing you didn't ask.
Okay.
Does Naughty Dog have any presence at all?
I don't
think Uncharted 4 DLC.
Like, maybe Uncharted 4 DLC, even then, I feel like that game... Because that game just came out. Like, maybe they talk about how well it sold. Like, that's something that they sometimes do at, like, the beginning of a press conference. Be like, because also, as far as I understand, Uncharted 4 sold really, really well. Like, even, like, obviously those games sell well. I think that's the game sold, like, way higher than any of the Uncharted games have in the past. So, yeah. Like, I think they will talk about maybe Uncharted 4. I think it's way too soon to talk about DLC stuff.
You just never know. So I was going to...
Because The Last of Us also came out, like, E3 week the year that came out. And, like, obviously they didn't talk about...
Right.
Left behind then. So, yeah. So that's it for Sony, unless you have any other questions to ask.
I think that's it.
Okay. Then this is just at the sitting here at the bottom of my outline. I just have one word with one question mark. Nintendo.
I feel like I should cut the podcast there.
If you want to cut the podcast, you can cut the podcast. But seriously, Nintendo?